This week on the new Screensavers, it's a sad farewell, but also a look back to some of the best moments from 2018. And now, not live from the Twit Eastside Studios in beautiful Petaluma, California, it's the new Screensavers.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
The new Screensavers is brought to you by Audible. Start a 30-day trial and your first audiobook is free. Visit audible.com/twit or text twit to 500-500. Welcome to the new Screensavers, episode 189. I'm sad to say there will be no 190, but we're going to go out with a bang with some of the best of 2018. This is our show for December 29th, 2018. Before we go on, a really big thanks to our producers, Anthony Nielsen, Jerry Wagley, to our studio staff, everybody who works so hard to put this together. We thank them. Colleen, thank you. Thank you, Karsten. Thank you, John, Burke, and thank you for watching. One of the things we covered a lot on the new Screensavers this year, especially skydiving in VR, bad idea. Flying with a jet suit in real life, really a bad idea. Playing with home robots, security bots, drink bots. Remember that? That was fun. Discoveries from organic matter to Mars, to ancient cities found with LIDAR. We really did cover the waterfront, didn't we? In this best of show, we put together some of our favorite segments. So let's kick it off with some of the great guests to join us, starting with, yes, the Tiki Tron and its creators, Sam Coniglio, a.k.a. Dr. Bombay, Kiki Jewell, and Catherine Bechvar. Watch.
This is it. This is the Tron. The world's only robot that serves tiki cocktails.
As far as we know, yes.
As far as we know, ever. And you came in second this time.
We actually came in third.
Third.
We usually dance between first, second, and third, depending on who's competing.
This is not your first rodeo, so to speak. You had the Cosmobot.
Our first robot was called the Cosmobot.
It made, let me guess, Cosmos.
Yes. It was a rocket ship-shaped robot that launches cosmic cocktails out of the rocket nozzle.
Oh, that's cool. There it is.
Yeah, in fact, that's it right there.
And we saw Catherine with her T-Bot.
T-Engine.
Yes. Oh, I get it. It's like the inference engine.
It's a very steampunk.
Very steampunk feeling T-Engine.
So cool.
Yeah.
And Catherine, you said it was a little difficult for the younger folks to figure out what that dial was for.
Yeah. So my rule of thumb is that basically anybody who looks younger than me, I sort of coach them in the operation of the rotary dial.
Have you ever seen a rotary phone?
And now it is something very different.
Well, it's mostly, you know, it's they understand they can put their finger in and that it turns, but getting it all, you know, all the way around to the silver stop and letting go is sort of a lost.
Do they ever just think it's a button and just like push into
I can't presume too. Because it's not 100% of the time, but it is definitely,
Where would you see one of those, except for maybe Dial M for Murder or something?
Right, exactly. So it is an interesting, I was not expecting it when I used a rotary dial, that it would be such a clear marker between different ages and different generations.
And Catherine, you're responsible for the look and feel of the Tiki.
So I styled myself the interaction designer for the Tiki Tron, and it, you know, we very much, so both my husband and I are very much into kind of tiki culture and tiki bars.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously. So I wanted something that was beautiful and fun to use and really exciting. And so it really has been a team effort, but the exact operation of how you select your drink was kind of my idea. So
and the tiki hut and the... Now, you told me we have to make a, Dr. Bombay, we have to make a sacrifice before we do this.
Yes. So part of the fun of the interaction with this device, unlike everyone else in the world who are so used to using cell phones and pushing buttons on the cell phones to get things done, you have to make a sacrifice. And that means you choose one of these idols.
Oh.
Like this.
That's it.
Each idol represents a different drink. In this case, it's the Mai Tai.
Oh, thankfully you put labels.
I thought that
on.
Was a price sticker.
No. The little red ink indicates the level of dangerousness of the drink.
Go ahead, Jason. Pick something really dangerous.
I won't know until I pull it out.
The scarier it is, the more dangerous.
I pull the dangerous ones in the treasure chest. The non-alcoholic ones are over there.
I'm going to go for the tallest one.
The tallest.
There you go.
Six
good
foot
choice.
Eight.
Good choice.
Okay, that one is
the Pina Colada.
All right. Okay. Now, for this, we have to bring in the engineer.
Yes,
Kiki is here. Kiki Jewell is the designer of the hardware and the software. Mm-hmm. Here's, I'm going to get in between you and Kiki,
all right.
And you're going to give us a little demo. What is it? By the way, there's a lot of stuff behind here. What is involved?
Don't look behind the green.
Is it a Raspberry Pi running this?
It is a Raspberry Pi. There are four motor hats that are on the Raspberry Pi. Each motor hat can control four motors.
Okay.
So for the 12 pumps, the 12 ingredients we have, three of those control those.
So Mrs. Bombay is revealing the hood. Okay, so there's four motors.
Motor hats, and there's 12 motors there.
Each hat can control three different.
Four. And the fourth one is to control the lighting effects.
Oh, wow.
And the smoke effects.
And the smoke, of course. So what do you program this in?
So it's programmed in Python on a Raspberry Pi.
Yep. And is it all ready to?
It's all ready to go.
How do we
it's ready
tell
for my sacrifice?
How does his sacrifice work? What do we do next?
Well, when the lava's hot, which if you look carefully at the volcano,
it seems to be steaming.
I'm a little scared.
It's ready to go.
Yep. All right. Yep.
Feet first. You'll need to make a prayer and then put it into
bow down to the tiki god.
You throw it in.
Wait a minute, something's happening back here. Oh my god, you killed it.
Yes. All right.
And everyone dances.
This is awesome.
Dance for your drink. Dance.
Woo. So there's,
and
there's
it's actively
drummers
making it.
And
yeah.
Oh, it's making it.
Look inside.
Yep, it's making it right now.
How did it know what to do?
Well, the tiki god knows your inner desire.
Oh, no, really? Is it doing face recognition?
Well, do you want to geek out a minute?
Yeah.
So you want to go? Do you want to try and figure it out, or do you want to?
Oh, is it a little RFID chip? Look at that!
Right.
Look at that! There's a little RFID chip in the base of it.
How did you guys not win first place?
This is so
seriously. This is awesome.
So you're actually. There's an RFID reader in there?
Yep, there's an RFID reader in the back.
So once this enters in...
Do you want the geek tour back here?
Yeah, let's go back, kids.
So the Raspberry Pi is in here. We have to protect it from liquids, right?
Yeah, so you got a rubber keyboard, and it's in a Tupperware.
Yeah, this is a waterproof keyboard.
That's the nicest Raspberry Pi case ever.
Thank you. So this controls all the pumps. We have that connected to the pumps.
Okay.
The DB9 connects to the butt.
Totally should have won this. This is amazing.
The only volcano with a DB9 in its butt. The connectors.
We got it.
All the connectors are different so that if anybody's setting it up that they won't set it up wrong.
Oh, good. You can't,
you
make can't
sure
plug it in wrong. That's important.
That it's easy to set up.
So you won't always be around to help.
Right. I mean, it's...
I put the seahorse in?
Sure. Wait, let's get it.
Switch out cups. I think
fresh I need
cups.
To accept my...
First, you got to taste yours.
First, you have to stir this. Okay. There you go, sir.
So, there's quite an array of beverages.
Thank you very much.
Good.
That has to be connected properly, too. Otherwise, you won't make the right drink.
That's right. Yeah. They're all labeled in there, so when we put the tubing in, and there's actually lights
really
on the back that light up.
I'm going to
see which one lights up on the back.
It's really amazing.
It's really good.
Now, this is a seahorse, so this is a mild...
I'm a believer.
This is a family-friendly beverage. Is that
right? No. This is one of the most popular tiki drinks ever made called the Mai Tai.
I love Mai Tai.
Invented in Oakland, California.
A little rum, a little pineapple.
Right, so now you have to bow down to the great tiki god.
But while I'm bowing, Alex, you should show what's happening behind the scenes.
All right.
Because we want to see this actually. Can you see it drop in?
I don't know if you can see. Yeah, you can see that stuff. You can also see the code shows what it's doing on the screen.
Where's the RFID reader?
It's right here.
Oh, wow.
It's tucked
in. So cool. So it's close enough. If you get within a foot of that, It can read that. It's not NFC.
It's actually about an inch.
It's RFID.
Yeah, it's about an inch. Pretty, it's,
in an
you
inch.
Have to be
okay.
pretty close.
So is it possible to miss?
You can turn
it
upside down.
Very rarely it has, but it's we're pretty spot on now.
All right. Oh, great Tiki guy. I beseech you.
You're
prepare
going to enjoy
for me
your drink.
The drink of
true.
The gods, the elixir of the gods. And I drop in the seahorse.
Volume.
And the song. Yeah, that song.
Yes. There's the code running on the Raspberry Pi. Look at that. It identifies what it's going to go in.
It's a really nice cup, too. Gold rum. Really nice glass.
Wow, that's so cool. That is really amazing. A little Curacao, orange juice, simple syrup. And those measurements, 0.22, is that 0.22?
How do you do this?
Ounces. It's in ounces.
It's in ounces.
Oh,
and
everybody can do that.
It's very calibrated.
I really wanted to
the recipes that Dr. Bombay has given me are
so
very
Dr.
accurate.
Bombay, you have crafted these recipes from an old family tradition.
Yes.
Did it put ice in there too?
No, it doesn't put the ice in. It
comes with ice. Okay.
Yes. Well, it comes with
ice. There you go, sir.
Thank you.
A proper
and a lovely,
tiki cocktail.
By the way, a really beautiful tiki.
And
look, it's
Maui.
Frosty.
Yeah.
These are nice. It's perfect. It's the perfect Mai Tai. How did you research this?
Yeah, well,
over many long nights.
Absolutely correct. We had to figure out how to convert the standard pour that a bartender does,
right.
like number of seconds of pour, and converting it into milliseconds of timing of the valve mm-hmm. with the peristaltic pumps.
Holy cow. Wait a minute. Did you say peristaltic pumps?
Yes. Flip that lid. They're right there.
So the motor hats on the Raspberry Pi mm-hmm. control these peristaltic pumps.
Yes.
Yep.
Now, I only know peristalsis from biology. Mm-hmm. It's your intestinal squeezing.
It's the same concept.
Yes.
So the idea is that inside those pumps, there's three wheels that squeeze the tube and sucks the liquids through. So the liquids never come in contact with anything except the tube itself.
Oh, very interesting.
So it's kept
clean. Flexible tubes.
Kept flexible tubes. So it's constantly running to bring the liquid across, and there's no contamination.
Come on, Jerry. I know you want to taste one of these. Should we get Jerry to throw in a...
Sure.
Might as well. Pick your...
Yeah,
pick your
ready to go.
We happen to have another one. Let's try this one here.
So,
These are the non-alcoholic ones, and these are the alcoholic ones.
Yeah, there's a menu if you want to look at the menu, and then...
Oh, so this is our special drink.
Oh, yeah, Trader Vic's Grog.
Trader Vic Grog is my second favorite drink.
That's my favorite.
It requires a secret ingredient, which I'll add later.
Okay. Actually, I have a question.
Wait, no. Your question?
No. Continue.
Okay.
I don't want to interrupt.
Oh, Tiki Chung.
It's true.
You are amazing. Legend. You make wonderful drinks.
A legend in San Francisco. He was a one-legged bartender.
Yeah.
Ah!
Whoa.
We have a different scream for every drink.
Oh, every drink has a different scream.
Yes.
Are those screams Dr. Bombay's voice?
We have a crew of people that helped out.
Look at that.
Lots of volunteers.
Look at that. So you're using the Adafruit for the hats, the Adafruit DC and stepper motor hats.
Yep.
Those are the ones
right.
you prefer.
Yep.
Yes. Adafruit does some great stuff.
Almost everything's Adafruit.
Where did you get the peristaltic pumps?
Also
Adafruit,
Adafruit
mm-hmm. as well.
Yep.
Dang.
Yep.
Now, are any of the drinks outside of like standard bar drinks, like you design the drinks themselves?
Yeah, the kid drinks, all those kid drinks except for the non-alcoholic Scorpion that you provided us, were all designed by my daughter and her friends.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
I have a mode, actually, where they can test new drinks, where they can say a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and it'll
squirt
a tenth of an
ounce. Does this live in your house when it's not
it
on
does.
The road traveling?
It does, and there are no health benefits to rum.
How old is
cocktail.
Your daughter?
She's 12.
What's her name?
Charlotte.
Charlotte. Cool. These are Charlotte designed soft
cheers.
Charlotte and friends. That actually is a fabulous Mai Tai.
Mm-hmm.
Can we all make one of these in our own home? Do you have the recipe for the
engineering? Well, the code is online.
And the code is up on GitHub.
You can create your own variation of a drink
which
machine.
Which GitHub channel are you on?
Kiki.org. KIKIORG.
Org on
GitHub is where my code is.
Okay. So you can read the code, and then actually you probably can deduce from that what you need, but do you have
you
a list there as well?
Yeah, you can modify
it's
it.
It's a Raspberry Pi 3. Mm-hmm. Does it matter? You probably could use an older Raspberry Pi. It's not a lot of code, not a lot
of
Yeah,
it's written
cogitating.
For a 3. Yeah,
okay.
It's written for a 3.
12 peristaltic pumps. You need the motor hats. And, of course, Did you, Catherine, did you build this yourself?
My dear friend Megan Lesh, who's an artist here in Petaluma, actually sculpted the tiki volcano body.
Petaluma is the place to go for stuff like
that. Yeah, I'm kidding. It's true.
I don't know why.
Yep.
Yeah, but we fabricated the tiki hut.
Titanium works.
You know, added a lot of the details, and it's really what I love about this project is that it's very collaborative. It's a team effort.
It is. It's neat. There's a bunch of people. Yeah,
definitely. So it's nice because some people, you know, everybody brings something different to the party, and they really can. We benefit from the skill set of a larger group of collaborators.
What a great project. Russ Pitts is on the horn. Hello, Russ.
Hello, Leo.
Hello, Russ.
Megan.
Hi. Oh, it's great to see you.
It's good to see
Russ, you. Russ, you wrote a book, which is available. I can't even say the name on TV, but it's it's available on Amazon. Eagle Spit, we'll say.
Sure.
Yeah. It's your story, the story of Russ working in the early days of Tech TV. Mm-hmm. And that's available on Amazon. And it's based on a memo that you wrote. Which became infamous at Tech TV, and we all loved.
It was on another website. We can't say the name of eftcompany.com.
Oh, yeah. did it make it to Pud's Eft Company? Oh, nice.
That was the BuzzFeed of the original .com.
Yeah. Pud once told me his whole goal in life was to write sites that he didn't have to do any work for. Mm-hmm. So he'd always create sites that just generated content all by themselves. Smart man. Smart cookie. You have a site now called TakeThis.org. Tell us what Take This does.
Take This is a nonprofit in the video game space, primarily. It's a mental health advocacy and awareness nonprofit. My co-founders and I, we lost some friends several years back to depression. We realized there was not a big push to get people talking about mental health issues. People in video game studios as well, they crunch. They work really hard. They don't feel comfortable talking about their issues. Don't feel comfortable getting help. And then, you know, our good friend Dr. Mark Klein was a mental health clinician, and he'd tell us that the number one way to get people to help is to let them feel comfortable talking about what they're experiencing. And so we found that people would not talk about what they're going through. They wouldn't get help.
Yeah.
And then sometimes, you know, they'd have tragic outcomes. So we started to take this to get people to talk about. You know, we talk about what we go through. We give panels. We publish stories at takethis.org of what people experience when they deal with mental health issues. We actually work with video game studios to help make their workplaces more mentally healthy. We're at a lot of the major conventions in the geek and game space, providing spaces where people can come if they're experiencing, you know, anxiety attacks or panic attacks. They can come, they can talk to somebody.
You call those AFK rooms, away from keyboard rooms. I think that's
such a
great
idea. Yeah, we
call
those AFK rooms.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's the most boring room at any convention.
Intentionally.
On purpose, yeah, exactly. We have coloring books, but mostly, aww, you know, it's just chairs and tables. People come, some people charge their phones. And then we have our trained volunteers. We call them psychomancers, who are there, who know how to work, you know, talk someone through a panic attack, and know when to call for help if, you know, if someone needs a little bit more help than that.
And so you have worked with the gaming community, which is a tight community, and now working on having them speak more, people that game speak more to each other about their feelings. What about game developers? Are there specific problems that game developers...
Yeah, are they worse than normals?
You know, we found that when we started putting together research to do lectures and talks, we found that the common statistic about mental health issues is roughly 1 in 4 people in America deal with mental health issues.
Wow.
Yeah, right? That's 25%. That's a lot, right?
And it's so stigmatized, though, you wouldn't know that, right? Because everybody hides it. That's the problem. We got to talk about it.
Yeah. We found that in the game development community, anecdotally, we don't have a lot of evidence on this because people don't talk about it, people don't report it, but anecdotally, we think that the number is closer to 1 in 2.
Wow.
For people in the video game development
Is
company.
That because the job's so stressful?
Partly. They tend to work long hours. They tend to work at a computer, not get up. A lot of folks will work straight through lunch, and they think they're, you know, doing a better job by sort of running themselves into the ground.
And you're expected to, too. I mean... That's the culture, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of sort of machismo around that. You know, if I can work longer than the guy next to me, right, then I'm a better coder or whatever.
Yeah.
They change jobs a lot. There's a lot of layoffs. People move across the country. There's a lot of stressors, timelines. There's deadlines. A lot of times milestones change depending on what's going on in the industry elsewhere or with the publisher. So it can be a really stressful job. And we found that people don't, you know, they work in these environments where they don't feel comfortable taking a day off even because they feel stressed, or they might not even know what they're going through. So that's what we do. We'll come in and we'll give lectures and seminars at these studios just to give people an overview of mental health wellness. And then if we need to drill down more specifically with specific teams, we can do that too.
So tell us about the game, because that's, I'm excited about that. We brought, it gave us an excuse to break out the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, well, this game, I guess it was just delayed for 20 years.
Well, there was a lot of stress in its making. Let's put it that way, right? This is what happens when developers take time off, kids. Get back to work.
It took a lot of time off. Now, our good friends at Megacat and Devolver Digital put together this game, Fort Parker's Crunch Out, and you get to play Devolver Digital's CFO, Fort Parker, and you get to crunch the
That's the guy the with a, with a yeah, mustache. With the so mustache. He's the boss. So you get to be That's a bad right. guy.
So this person is sleeping. I can go get coffee for them, maybe? Let's hope they're sleeping. Their eyes are crossed out. I don't know if that's
Oh, maybe they're dead. Do you have any deaths in this? I hope not.
I don't know.
Trigger warning.
Okay, I'm going to electric shock. I'm going to go for the big
what?
Guns. Here's the battery okay. I can yeah. choose.
There's an electric shock?
Yeah.
Will that wake them up?
I hope so. Okay, I've got a battery.
Oh, my God. Look at this. This is cruel.
Oh, it didn't wake her up.
Maybe the other side?
Oh, maybe. Or let's try this guy.
Oh, they're all falling asleep. Yeah. Look, you've got other ones.
Oh, the pig hit me.
No, you're never going to make this game.
Why did the pig just kill me?
Oh, yeah. There you go. He's back to work. You need more battery juice for her, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I probably do. Or I can get it. There's a stick available, too.
You can beat them?
Yeah.
Man, I like this game. See, I'm Fork Parker.
You are. Do you want to play?
Really?
Okay, I got the stick. I'm going to hit this lady with the stick.
Have you ever asked me for a day off, Megan? What did I do? I hit you with a stick.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When I first played this game, it did remind me of working with Leo.
Exactly. Leo does resemble Fork Parker. So every tool doesn't work on people. I mean, this is good management skills here. Sometimes they like coffee. Sometimes they like a stick in the head.
Oh. Well, you've got all but two programmers working now.
And I can pick up all this money, too, that's laying all over the floor.
It's slipping. Your ship date is slipping.
Oh, no. Okay. I got the call.
So what is the point of this? Do we learn how not to be?
I think the goal is to poke some fun at a serious issue in the game space. Crunch is a big deal, and it runs people into the ground. You know, this information is several years out of date, but last time I wrote an article about employment in the video game space, the average time in the industry was 5 years.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, so that the average video game employer would spend 5 years in the industry before bouncing out due to stress or layoffs or whatever.
It's
and I don't
work.
Think that's changed significantly since then.
Think about that next time Devolver you play No Man's Sky. You know, it's that's you're working, you're paid in blood, sweat, and tears here. This is, yeah.
So every time something horrible happens in the news where someone takes their own life, we always hear people saying, like, reach out. You know, people love you. We love you. But then other people say, like, it's really hard when you're depressed to reach out. So just saying reach out, just do it, is hard. So what do you suggest that people, if you want to reach out to someone, what are some ways, you know, besides just saying, like, hey, you know, are you depressed? Like, what are some ways to reach out to people? Is that what you do? Say, are you depressed?
Yeah, you know, keep track of your friends. I think you tend to know who in your friends group struggles with feeling good, or maybe, you know, maybe they've been open about their mental health issues in the past. People tend to get down when things happen, right? So if there's something in the news that's a big struggle, like, when isn't there? Now.
Yeah, good luck. Yeah.
But, you know, keep tabs on your friends and check out. If you haven't heard from somebody in a few days, feel free, you know, reach out, ding them on Twitter or whatever, you know, however you keep in touch with people, send them a copy of Fork Parker's Crunch Out if you want. We actually have things at Take This that we sell through our partners, Wormwood Gaming. I call them Hope Shields, and I don't actually have one on me. But we basically sell those at conventions where we're at, and something you could buy, and it's pocket-sized. You can hand it to somebody as a reminder that you care about them. And a lot of people, and that could be anything. It could be a coin. It could be like a rock you found on the beach. If there's somebody you know who struggles, they're there, right there. And they make, you know, they make different types of wood. Those are collectible, and they're a lot of fun. They're like little worry stones.
Oh, I want one of those. That's cool.
And it's something you can hand to someone and say, "Hey, I
love you.
I know you sometimes struggle. Yeah, I love you.
We care
when you're feeling down, and remember how much we want you with us."
I do also want to say though. When somebody does commit suicide, everybody around them feels like they failed. And so I don't want to put pressure. I don't want it to be the impression that it's your job. You know, you should reach out, obviously. But if you lose somebody, it doesn't mean you failed, does it?
No, absolutely. You know, you can't control what other people do, and you can't take responsibility for what someone else chooses to do. It's good to reach out to people. It's good to let them know that you're there. But ultimately, you know, you can't feel responsibility for what someone chooses to do because, there's more than whether or not they heard from you going on there, right? These issues are so complicated. And I think a lot of the reason people don't feel comfortable talking about them is there is that sort of sense of guilt and that sense
of ickiness.
It's really hard to connect with somebody because you're afraid you don't know what to do. You know, we tell people the number one thing you can do to someone is simply listen. Tell them you're there. Tell them you care about them and listen to what they have to say. And that is such a powerful act. It's so often that when people say they're listening to you, but they're just simply waiting for their turn to talk, right? If you reach
you know
out to
me
someone,
so well, Russ. I think that's important to say that it isn't your responsibility to keep your friend safe and alive. But it's all of our responsibility to create environments where it's safe to say, I'm not feeling good, where we express at all times to everybody our support and love. Those environments will help more than anything else. That let's change how we think about things. And I think Take This is doing a great job. And that's really why you have rooms like that and the badges. No one person is responsible for their other people in their lives, but we all are responsible for making it a safer space and a healthier space for everybody. Jillian Ogle, she's the founder and CEO of Let's Robot, a platform where anyone can take control of other people's homebrewed robots over the internet. Jillian said it's okay for me to refer to this as kind of like Twitch for robots.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it.
Yeah. Hi, good to see you. Welcome.
Good to see you.
So if you go right now to letsrobot.tv, we're on the front page. And you could actually control some of these devices rolling around here, right?
Actually, let me put a robot on the front page.
Put a robot on the front page. They're more than one, though. You could also go to Jillian's account.
Yeah, how many are running around here right now?
Oh, we've got three on right
got
now.
Got three out there, and then you've got this one that's streaming as well.
Yeah, that one's sitting on the desk.
So you're not – what's interesting to me is that this is not your background. You're not a roboticist.
Yeah.
An artist. Right?
Oh, yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're busy. I'll let you type.
I was adding...
She's slacking.
Adding the... Oh, yeah. I'm slacking off. That's what I do.
So that's the view from one of the robots. This is letsrobot.tv right now.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And somebody... Now, how do you control it?
If you just go to letsrobot.tv, you can sign up for an account. You can control any of the robots that anyone adds online. There's multiple robots. Anyone can add a robot. We have open source software that runs on a Raspberry Pi. We have an API.
Oh, neat.
We have kits that we're working on getting out to people.
So people could download the kit or the instructions to
build. You'd also have to buy some hardware, right?
Basically the idea is to be compatible with just about any robot. Mm-hmm. So we're just trying to figure out ways to interface with as many pieces of hardware as possible and to let people control them in real time. Yeah.
So who built these? Did you build these?
Yeah, I built these. Yeah.
But your background is as an artist.
Yeah. So I was a professional artist for about 10 years. I worked for Disney Interactive.
Oh, neat. Doing games?
Yeah, doing games.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And
so you can draw a perfect bell?
I can draw a pretty good bell. My drawing skills have probably gotten a little rusty. It's been a while.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And how did you get into robots?
So after I was doing art, I actually hopped over to game design while I was still at Disney. And then when I left, I went to go do indie games for a while. And I finished a project, launched it on iPad. And then it was like, okay, time for my next prototype. So I spun up a few projects, and this was one of them. And I was like, you know...
You like this one?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because I was just getting into live streaming, and like all my indie game friends were live streaming,
right.
Then Twitch Plays Pokemon came out, and I was like, oh, this is really interesting, except it sucks, because, you know, there's like all this latency.
It was a car wreck.
It was a total car wreck.
That was part of the fun of watching people trying to do something.
Yeah, I mean, so you have all this latency, you have chat is the only interface, so you have like all this spam in the chat, so... You know, I was like, it would be a lot more interesting if you sort of designed around this use case and figured out, like, how to, you know, how do you handle multiple people trying to do a thing? What can you do with that sort of tool, like, if it's real-time and interactive? And I thought, well, robots would sort of be the end game here. So, yeah, I started working on this platform.
How do you handle multiple people throwing commands and instructions and stuff at a single object? Like... Is it just in any given second the number of turn lefts versus the number of turn rights, the highest number wins, and that command is sent at that moment? How does that work?
So the robot does what the consensus is at any given time. So it's called a real-time dynamic voting system. Okay. And like
you should call that an RTDV.
An RTDV.
Yeah.
The other name is like the mass user interface or the MUI.
So the more times I hit left, the more votes I get, or do I only get one vote?
You only get one vote at any time. So you can use the arrow keys to drive. Some commands aren't tied to votes, so they're just sort of free to use. Some commands you have to pay for, and, you know, it's all very prototype-y and early stage, but people seem to be pretty interested in this so far.
Yeah, it's really fun.
To work really well.
Yeah. And that was one of the problems with Pokemon, was that it was chaotic.
Yeah.
So you've worked on ways to make it a little bit more like something's really going on.
Yeah, and we're actually getting close to doing a big update, and that'll help kind of smooth out the controls as well,
Because
right now it's pretty rudimentary. There's just like, you know, single buttons, but we'll add like, you know, vectors or like analog stick style controls.
Oh, fun.
And that'll make it a little bit more smooth.
So there's really two ways to play. You could build your own robot and put it online, or you can be... A consumer, a robot consumer.
Or you can play Control. The robots can hear if you type in the chat. A lot of them talk.
So is that what's going on with that noise?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's them chatting away. So, you know, they hang out with me all day at work and go with me to places. And
can you silence them when you need to?
Oh, yeah.
You need to focus? All right.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Plus, they have off switches. So,
well, that's true.
You know, when things get really dire, there's always that.
So one thing that I've noticed, speaking of speaking, is in chat, not everything that hits chat is spoken through the speaker. Sometimes a comment will go by and I notice it doesn't go through, but then another two or three comments will go by and they will actually pass through. Is there a different command, or is it just reciting anything that's being put into the chat?
So if you put a period in front of the sentence right now, it'll stop. It won't say it out loud.
That's what I was missing.
Because this room is shared between all the robots that I own.
This one room controls all of these?
Yeah. 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 So, like, you'll see the robot name next to the person's name, they'll be, you know, because they're talking on that robot. But this is like Jill's chat room, right? So it's a little bit of a different structure because I own multiple robots, but they're all the same, you know. Owner.
So I'm going to follow you. If I wanted to do that, I'd go to letsrobot.tv/robocaster/Jill.
Yeah.
And you keep this on all the time? This is like always going?
Yeah, and I try to stream as much
You're like JR in the guy in Blade Runner who had all the little, he'd come home and go, hello, J.I., hello, J. You're like right?
Oh, yeah. Like, well, you know, we're slowly working towards Pee-wee's big playhouse.
Right. Good, good.
Right. Everything
some of these
will
have headlamps, which is cool, so they can look around in the dark.
Oh, yes. Yeah, they can make little faces with the LED panels. And, like, you know.
Oh, that's neat.
And the robots can be anything, right? So these are simple wheeled robots, but people have made, like.
Somebody's doing the hand right now.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a little hand that's waving.
This one sits on my desk.
So yeah. Somebody's controlling that.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and, like, if you see here, like, you can, the parts for this robot are actually exposed. So, you know, there's, like, an Arduino here, and that's controlling the motors, and then the Raspberry Pi handles a lot of the streaming.
How much to build a robot, roughly, one of your kits?
A lot of the users can get a kit for around $2 to $250.
Okay.
Some of the ones that we sell, because they're more
complete. I kind of want to do this.
Yeah.
Like, have one in my house.
Oh, yeah. That would be a lot of fun. So a lot really
check,
popular
check
one.
With Lisa.
Lisa may not like it. She will step on it. And the cats will go crazy.
Yes, yeah. They will.
Do you have cats?
I do not have cats. Okay. We do have a little dog in the house, though, and they
what
do
the
have
dog
a lot
think?
Of fun. The dog keeps its distance. some people, you know, their pets are less, or they're a little bit more brave, yeah.
J.F. Sebastian, that's who had little robots.
So you're relatively new yourself to robotics in general. Did you pursue the idea of the site and the kind of interface prior to learning about how to build robots, did that make it any easier to learn? Because when I think about building a robot, I feel like that's a big hill to climb.
Yeah. So sort of the progression that it went was I wanted to make an internet controlled robot, and I was like, and I was already streaming to Twitch, so I was like, okay, I'll build one and stream it to Twitch. It took me about a month to figure out how to make a wireless robot that could stream to Twitch. And then, you know, Twitch has all its latency.
Right.
In my first version, I actually, like, ran the video through a game engine and added all these 3D graphics and stuff.
Oh, wow.
But now we're just trying to run, like, straight off a Raspberry Pi, and we're really focused on, like, the low latency and the interactive aspect.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, because it's real-time control. So you don't, if there's any delay in this, you're going to hit a button and it's going to take a while for it to happen. So this is less late, and you're trying to get this almost in real time?
Yeah, and I did the Twitch channel for a while, and then one of my friends suggested that I join, like, a startup incubator and try to turn into a thing. So that's, doing the whole startup
That was good advice.
It could have been premature advice. It's too hard to say.
The best way to do something like this is just jump in. Should jump in with all wheels.
Well, you don't. Yeah. Do you charge for this?
Well, no. You can stream a robot for free.
And that's one thing you gotta solve.
And some people do actually charge for certain things.
Okay.
For instance, like you can see here, like there's cop lights that you could do on the LEDs, and I have that set to one robit, and a robit is something you can buy to spend on things.
So
I do
much
that
like Twitch, you could have donations.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So we had a user who built a high-velocity air-powered ping-pong cannon, and she had it on in her workshop while she was working.
Yeah.
And then, you know, people would pay money and pelt her with ping-pongs while she was, like, trying to get stuff done.
That would be the solution for you and Stacey Higginbotham that wants to be able to punch
so
you
So one of our
the
co-hosts
internet.
Is in Austin, and she wants to be able to punch me every once in a while.
So maybe get the ping-pong thing.
Have her shoot ping-pongs.
Yeah, that's close second.
You had one like that, though, right? You had you asked people on Twitch to slap you.
Yeah. So one of the first robots I made was I called it the bit slapper because the you use bits on Twitch, right? So people would donate bits, and then the hand would slap me in the face as soon as they donated. And then, like, the first day I turned that thing on, I made, like, $300.
So dang!
Well, there's kind of something to this.
So. I think you also learned something about humanity.
Right.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
We also had some fun around the Bay Area. Jason took a trip down, remember, to Mountain View, to meet up with Skydio's CEO, Adam Bry. He tried out their drone that flies and shoots 4K video, but you don't pilot it. It's doing it all on its own with AI and computer vision. Watch this.
I have an R1 with us here today. This has been designed for full autonomy from the ground up, so it has 13 cameras on it. It has two facing in every direction. So you can see the pair on the top, each of the sides. There's also two on bottom. And then this is the user video camera out front. So, you know, we have a bunch of sensing in every direction, and then we have a super powerful computer in here as well. This is the NVIDIA TX1 computer. But the real magic is, of course, in the software. We call it the Skydio Autonomy Engine, and it's really this incredibly sophisticated system that processes information from all the cameras. It understands the environment around it, so it knows the 3D structure, it knows semantic information, so it knows people, cars, sky, stuff like that. And then it uses all that information to make intelligent decisions. So it's a very sophisticated device, but the goal for it, like the end product experience, is super simple. It's basically like a film crew that fits into your backpack.
So one big difference here, I think, with a lot of other drone manufacturers, drone products, is that you're not shipping this with a controller. You pulled out your smartphone. Tell us a little bit about the idea to do that. You've got a lot of confidence that this thing can do what it does with just a smartphone.
Yeah, exactly. So it's the kind of thing that would only make sense if you can trust the drone to fly
itself.
And one of our big design goals here is to make it so that if you're comfortable using the camera app on your phone, you should be able to comfortably use this to capture amazing footage. So you can take off from your hand, and it's smart enough to know if it's safe to take off. So, for example, if I point it over it, you hear it'll say obstruction ahead, so it won't let me do it.
Good, thank you.
Yeah. And to test this out, we have Nicole, who leads our flight testing team.
Hi, Nicole.
So she is used to pushing the vehicle to the limits. So I just swipe up to take off.
Starts to spin.
Whoa! Now, what is it programmed to do at this very moment? Is this programmed to kind of step out and point towards us and lock onto us?
Exactly. So it took off from her hand, so it knows to start tracking her. So that little orbit symbol there tells us that it's locked onto her. And right now it's in follow mode, which is the default mode. So if she runs around, you can see it start to track her.
Oh, that is neat. That is really cool. And it's tracking through the trees. It's avoiding all of these obstacles automatically, even though she's running through them.
So if you watch her run around, like, it knows where it's safe to fly. It'll weave around the trees. It ducks under everything.
Obviously really great for sports, skateboarding.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, really any kind of outdoor activity becomes a lot of fun with a drone involved. So, like, hiking, biking, skiing. But even stuff just, like, playing with your kids in your backyard is pretty cool.
Yeah. How long can the R1 stay in the air before having to come down and, I guess, I'm imagining swap out the battery or charge it?
So the flight time is about 16 minutes. It depends a little bit on what you're doing. There are a couple of other modes we can show you. So some of these are new. We're launching today, but I'll first show you lead mode. So in lead mode, it predicts where Nicole is going and it tries to stay in front of her. So here we're in lead. So see, she's going in that direction.
And that corrects almost immediately. It like sends the command, the drone gets in place. And yeah, look at that. It's staying right in front of her. When she turns, obviously it has to do a bigger correction to get back out in front.
That is amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
That is really cool.
Here, I'm going to stop following now. I'll show you some of the one shots, which are new things we've created. So we'll tap
on... You can see the targeting. That's really cool.
So we can see the targeting.
Yeah.
So if I tap on you now, it's following you.
Oh, dear.
And then we're going to do a droney here. So a droney is a pretty fun perspective setting shot. So I'll just tap droney. We get the countdown.
Yep.
3, 2, 1.
Ah!
Yeah, there you go.
That is so neat! And so it does the out, and then it comes back.
Exactly.
Back in. Now, I'm obviously seeing, from my vantage point, you know, it's adjusting. It's a little bit of a breeze here.
Yep.
But everything inside of the camera is counterbalancing for that. So you end up with pretty still shots as a result, right?
Yeah, exactly. There's actually two levels of stabilization, and one of these is new with this software update. So the gimbal is mechanically stabilized. So if you look at the camera out front, it keeps itself level.
Yep.
But then we also do software stabilization, which is new. So let's do another droney here.
All right.
So we'll do droney again, and I can actually control the settings. So I say I want to go really far away, and I want it to go even faster.
Really far away in this case is 262 feet. Wow, and then it kicks in, and there it goes, and hopefully it sees those trees, which it's going to because of all the onboard cameras.
Yeah, exactly. So that's one of the keys here. Like, these one-shots become much more useful if with collision avoidance, because you can just do it with complete reckless abandon.
Right.
And trust it to avoid obstacles and do whatever it needs to do to make the shot work.
So this is obviously the kind of thing that you then do, put out on Instagram or something like that. So everybody can marvel at
exactly.
what you can do.
Yeah, it's super fun. It basically creates these just like perfect Instagrammable shots. So the other thing that's pretty cool is that these will actually keep following you if you move during the one shot. I'm going to do a rocket.
So when you lock to a person, even though it's doing its own pattern, it's still tracking that particular person. So if they move, it continues that pattern but scales it differently depending on where they are.
Exactly. So you'll see it'll shoot up in the air here, but it'll keep looking at her. So here we see it tracking her. And then when it's done with the rocket, it'll come back down to wherever she is.
That is amazing. That is super impressive.
And then the other thing we can do, which is new, is called cable cam. So here I can set two positions. So I'll say that's a position and then fly over here.
Do like a manual control to reposition it somewhere.
And say that's the B position.
It's like a tracking shot.
Exactly. And so I click go and it'll smoothly go back and forth between those two shots. Which can make, you can set up, like, even with this, like, really simple primitive, you can get these, like, amazingly smooth, cool, like, landscape kind of stuff. And then, if we want, we can set it to follow subject. If I tap on Nicole, so if she moves now, it'll follow her, but it'll stay on that line that I've given it. And so this becomes really useful, like, if you're filming a soccer game or something, you can set this up on a sideline. And it basically gets this sort of perfect sideline tracking shot.
That is really impressive.
Yeah. I mean, this is the kind of thing where, like, you know, to create something like this previously, you'd be talking about a film crew with, like, a dolly and a bunch of equipment, and this is literally, like, three taps on an app.
The idea, I mean, obviously we have technology that allows us to do this now. You're demonstrating that. Would you say that creators are, like, your number one kind of target for this technology? It's creators, filmmakers, that sort of thing?
I think that's definitely a major category for us. Like, we think of this as really a new kind of camera. Like, it's a camera that you don't have to point and control yourself. It's a camera that controls itself. And we think, you know, athletes, people who do interesting, cool stuff outside, that's a major use case and customer group for us. And then also creative people who have this idea of this kind of shot and want to be able to create content. But being able to do that without having to hire and run a whole crew is super, super powerful. We're running a bit low on battery here, so I'll stop tracking her, and then I can click return to phone now here. It's using my phone's GPS signal to come back into the general area. So GPS isn't accurate enough to do super tight following, but it is enough to get it to just return to the general vicinity.
When the R1 knows that it's about to run out of battery and you as the operator don't do anything specifically, does it automatically come over and land before it knows it's about to run out entirely?
Yeah, so it we have a couple layers of intelligence built in. So it detects when the battery is running low. It'll let you know that on the phone. And then if the battery gets too low, it'll land itself. And it has an intelligent landing mode where it'll look for a flat place to that it thinks it's safe to touch down.
Welcome to the inside of my smart home. This is the Schlage Smart Lock, which happens to be the only device I have that works with HomeKit. So I could lock it like this. Boring. Or I could do this. Hey, lock the door.
I'm on it. Your front door is locked.
Or I could use the Home app on my watch. Pretty cool. Now we have these two cute little neighbors here, the Neato Smart Vacuum and the Yunmai Smart Scale. They're friends. Ask Neato to stop cleaning.
What were you stopping then?
Did I show you this camera that was recording you on the outside? This is the Yi camera, and it will follow, if it sees motion, it will follow you around. See? It's like one of those paintings where the eyes follow you around, except the eyes are really following you around and sending the video up into the cloud. This is one of the many brains of my smart home, the Echo Show, one of my favorite devices because it has a screen, and I can use it to make video calls with anyone I want or to drop in on Jerry's office in Twit to find out what Jerry and Anthony are doing, which is always interesting.
I'm not that innocent.
Here's our Sony TV, which is an Android TV that we have hooked up to an Apple TV, which can be confusing. Works with the Android TV, so I could say, turn on the TV.
Sorry, something went wrong.
So here's the Apple TV if I wanted to use that. Turn on the TV, please. I love my Apple TV because I can...
Sorry, something went wrong.
Okay, we heard you the first time. Thank you. I can't use voice with the Android TV, but I can with the Apple TV. So I could say, open YouTube and watch the new screensavers.
Sorry, what device?
There we go, and I can see our friend Flo on the new screensavers. Stop.
Sorry, what device?
If you ever feel like throwing your smart devices just out the window, just know I too have been there. There's nothing a little plug, unplug, and plug back in will solve. You're always still in control. Ah, the HomePod. I really looked forward to this device, but the truth is she just sort of sits over here gathering dust. Hey! That was frightening. And I bet you're wondering how secure it is to have this device that unlocks my door right next to an open window. Well, let me show you. Say I was a criminal outside the window. Hey, unlock the front door.
I can't unlock secure accessories here.
See, Apple's thought of everything. This is the Echo Plus. And the Plus means that it has a smart hub inside. Ideally, if you get this, you could just say, find my smart devices.
I couldn't find any new smart home devices.
So yeah, that's it. So yeah, I'm gonna go now. See you later. Hey, lock the door.
If you're looking to catch a glimpse of the future, then you'd be hard-pressed to find an event that showcases a taste of what the future might look like better than the World's Fair Nano, which actually took place in San Francisco this last weekend.
What's it like being a drone?
We began our journey exploring some of the more modern methods of transportation. Leaf Tech, for example, offers a skateboard with a unique wheel array underneath the deck that helps the board ride like a snowboard.
Imagine we're going down a cab track.
All right.
Pull up to the lift and you just do your little slide stop like you're about to get on a lift, okay?
But I've got no slide because I'm not on snow.
You're thinking about this. You gotta see the snow. That's why I made you close your eyes.
On the other hand, the folks at Geoblade offered a high-tech hoverboard that, well, let's just say it rides quite a bit differently than what I was used to. It was pretty hard for me to adjust to.
My brain isn't working.
Don't bend your knees.
Okay, that's different. Because when I go snowboarding, I bend my knees.
Yeah, this is the only board.
So
bend your knees.
Got it.
The beauty is that once you've got it, you're both hands free.
It makes it look easy. I give up.
Now, we've all been to the airport and, you know, needed to go from one side to the other. And let's face it, all that walking can get a bit tiring after a while. Well, the team at Motobag actually have carry-on luggage that magically transforms itself into a vehicle when needed.
So you lock it in place, pull these out, you turn it on, and off I go.
Two speed settings, 5 miles an hour and 8 miles an hour. You can go a range of 10 miles on a single battery charge.
Hey, it works. Not bad.
That's all fine and good, but let's go from the now and step into the true future.
We might be the same height, but you're just a little bit more enhanced on the feet region. What's going on down there?
Cheating a little bit. We have the Bionic Boots here.
Not necessarily a consumer product at the moment, but this amazing exoskeleton developed by Kihei Seymour allows for superhuman running speeds.
It's a pair of shoes that makes a human run at 25 miles an hour by use of passive energy springs. I'm looking towards future advancements with servos and actuators to boost the performance to 45 miles an hour.
The World's Fair Nano also offered a glimpse into the ways technology plays with the mind. Virtual reality continues to trend upwards, and the Hologate team has been rolling out its turnkey multiplayer VR setup in recreation centers across the country.
Well, the idea is it's a social experiment. You know, we want to have people actually be together and work together as a team. We have haptic feedback lights. We have screens that are not just first person, they're actually third person cameras that are, you know, different around. Everybody wants to play this.
As evidenced by the line to view the technology, which sprawled out to a 2-hour wait for the entirety of the day. Ever played a game with your mind? If the puzzle box is any indication, mind control could become quite a big deal as the technology develops. In this case, a player's focus is measured within the mechanics of the game, and that focus will actually fire off the propellers of the encased flying machine.
You're going to raise this red bar up until it hits the target. Once it does, that will trigger the helicopter to take off and fly just like that. And as long as you stay focused,
what?
You stay in the air, and if you get distracted, it's going to land.
Replicating that, however, was an even bigger challenge.
I see it getting so close, and you're nodding. You're like, yeah, you almost... Oh, no. No. Cinema snow globe. Shake it, and it plays a video inside. You may think I'm talking to you right now, but I'm watching a movie.
The World's Fair Nano featured a lot of tech, but it also featured a glimpse at how the future might taste.
Do I want to try some algae-based nutritional bar?
I think you should. However, it's going to be a journey. It's like an intense experience. Some people cannot finish it. Some people are like, I love it.
Okay. That's very interesting.
Does it taste healthy?
Yeah, it absolutely does. Of course it does. It doesn't taste artificial. I mean, I never have considered what algae tastes like, but I suppose it tastes like this.
You're actually correct. We've kind of like complemented the flavor with something to be more palatable, but still you get that taste of ocean. It's definitely a new experience that you've never had before.
And you get the benefit of green teeth, which is not a bad thing.
Huh? And tongue as well.
I don't get it. I don't understand Soylent. It doesn't taste bad. It's just, it's very bland. Oh, okay. Now I get it. I've been trying to interview them, and they just won't talk to me.
How do we inspire the next generation of future thinkers? Smart Girls was showcasing its platform for teaching young girls how to build their own understanding of the fundamentals of coding.
It uses what we're calling sugar-coded. It's a block system. It's very, very simple. You have commands over here that you can drag and drop and adjust. I'm going to show you something else, which I think is really cool. When you look at these blocks and then you look at the code behind it, you see the same numbers. You see words instead of the blocks themselves, and you realize it's not that big of a leap from doing this to real coding.
All centered around these small motorized toys that can perform a number of maneuvers based entirely upon the coding prowess of the user.
Your coding is obviously top-notch because she didn't go off the table.
She did fall once, which also proves she's very durable because she's back up there doing it again.
Why are there diodes in this banana?
And then we saw the team at WebGuys showing off how they're enabling young students to become adept in the ways of building things like virtual reality environments, as well as, well, inserting strange probes into bananas for dramatic and educational effect.
You tap a banana, you're making some music.
Mycroft AI was there with its own smart home assistant platform, totally open source because, well, why should all of the tech giants have all the fun, especially when these home assistants are being scrutinized for how secure and how private they may or may not be?
We don't collect any information off the voice interactions. We do have an opt-in for people who trust us. They want to contribute their data to our data sets to help improve the experience. And then customizable. I mean, you see here we can do, some different colors. You can change the name and the wake word. You can change the voice. All our hardware is open hardware, hackable hardware. So take the schematics, adjust them a little bit, put it on the head of your robot, take the guts out and put them in a different device.
It looks like Amy is free at 5 p.m. today.
Some of the stuff that really sings to me personally is what we're seeing in the way of audio technology and how that merges with experiential control systems and visual representations, which is what LoveTech had on tap. They had this really cool booth that allowed you to talk to a person on the other side of the booth through a microphone with all of these really crazy audio effects and play around on an XY axis. Really cool stuff. But they also had this cool oscilloscope setup.
There's a whole variety of sounds, and what you're seeing is actually what the sound looks like. The left channel goes up and down with the electron gun, and the right channel goes left and right, and it's showing it really quickly, but that's exactly what the sound looks like.
You're seeing a spaceship here. I imagine you created the sound from the picture in that case, right?
Well, it goes in both directions. So there's a really wonderful piece of software. Jared Beam Fenderson is like one of the pioneers of this whole art form. And the software lets you import three-dimensional models and see what they hear what they sound like, and also go in the opposite direction where you synthesize new sounds and see what they look like.
Right.
So you, from that dual perspective, you can generate sounds that, you know, look this amazing.
Overall, it was an absolute blast wandering the pier, examining, enjoying, and in some cases consuming what may have one day been thought of as the future. What's more exciting is that the future, as evidenced by what I saw with my own eyes last weekend, is now.
You know, for years, hope you're enjoying, by the way, this Best Of episode. I am. It's really fun to see these segments. We did some great stuff, didn't we? For years, we've been hearing about the Magic Leap, right? Billions of dollars raised. Nobody, it was top secret. Nobody could talk about it. This year, they came out with an actual product, the Magic Leap One. We were dying to get our hands on one. Fortunately, Zio Design founder Nicole Lazzaro, a game designer, knew all about it, and she brought one for me to try on. Watch.
We're going to play a game. This is a Halloween game, appropriately, that you designed in a weekend.
Right, yeah, I developed in a weekend.
Now, I'm going to walk around a little bit, and you can tell me what I'm seeing. One of the things that's amazing on this is, because the computer is on my belt, I completely move around. Is this what they call 6 degrees of freedom? How many degrees of freedom?
It's 6 degrees of freedom, yeah. Three degrees is like you're rotating like a record or a ballerina.
Yeah.
And 6 degrees is where you can actually...
up and down?
Well, you can, yeah. Basically, it's, yeah, left, right, and up and down is three, but being able to walk forward into a scene.
The Z
axis. And then
the
be able
axis.
To go up and, you know, up and down, right? So you can, like, look under the table if you wanted to.
There's no pumpkins there, but there's a pumpkin right there. Now, okay. This is called Pumpkin Bash.
Pumpkin Smash. Yes.
Smash.
So it was a game jam. Just yeah.
So by looking at these, you can see they're disappearing. Now, I can see, oh, look, there's a pentagram with pumpkins in them.
Oh,
should
my.
I? Is that, should I do something with that? I'm scared. It's
yeah,
spooky.
You never know.
It's hard to describe this. I know you're seeing the video. And you, by the way, we can see the field of view right now because of just the way the lighting is. There's kind of a box.
Uh-huh, yep.
But normally, the field of view is kind of disappears.
Right. It depends on, it's all on the way, it's a new way of thinking about design. I've been working on our other game, which is Follow the White Rabbit for VR.
Yeah.
And what you want to do, this one I did for AR first.
So this is admittedly a simple game because you wrote it in a weekend. I just want to emphasize that. And the reason that's interesting is that you were able to. You wrote it in a weekend using Unity, right?
Correct, yeah, Unity and C#. And then I got the forest assets and the ghosts and the pumpkins from the Unity asset store. So I didn't need to, you know.
You didn't design them.
I didn't need
you didn't
to partner with an artist.
Let me see how many pumpkins I have now. Ooh, there's one. Hey, get out of here. Go. All right.
Do you want to try the other one?
Yeah, let's try another one. So now I'm in it looks like a Parisian cafe. There's the doors. There's the manifestos on the wall. There's a top hat. Oh, there's the Eiffel Tower being built. Okay, well, that puts us in time. What? Uh-oh. There's some broken tea set on the ground that disappeared when I looked at it. Carrots. What is going on in here? And there's a painting on the wall. It's kind of, oh, wait a minute. That's not a painting at all. It's a puzzle, and I'm putting it together here. Oh, look at that. All I have to do is find the pieces. Okay, I'm going to confess to you, I've played this once before.
So. Where were they?
Oh, drink me. No, I don't want to drink that. Not yet.
That's for after the show.
That's later. Ah, I think that goes there. The idea of this is a puzzle, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. So this is an escape room. The game is called Follow the White Rabbit. And it's a series of escape rooms around the world. It's a game about a magician who's been a charlatan, like, all his life.
Oh, so you might play this in different rooms all over the world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cool. This is fun. Yeah. So this is another game. This is a game you wrote for VR.
Right, right. And I've just done my first port to Magic Leap. And now what you can see is that by the room, it's a fully occluded room, which works okay on Magic Leap. But really, the value of AR is going to be when I drop the walls out and then put
these are just objects in my room.
Right.
As opposed to this room that you built.
Right.
So that's what you do in VR. You build an entire space, but in AR, you're not going to do that, right?
Yeah, you want to pull the walls out and then dynamically place the furniture and the puzzles and all that you know, in the room that you're actually in.
Right. But what's interesting about both of these is that these are it's not hard to write experiences in the Magic Leap. And what I really like is that you don't feel disoriented. You're still in your space. If somebody came in, you could have a conversation with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some might say, well, that means it's not as immersive.
And well, just imagine like having two people, two Magic Leaps, and then we're both solving this puzzle room together.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
One of the problems, of course, with virtual reality is the inability to interact with the environment. And you see here, it's not exactly, I have to look at something, mm-hmm. it grabs it, and then it puts it up on this puzzle piece.
Right.
This works. But yeah. One of the big differences is I can't walk around.
You can't walk around.
Space,
and then, you know, this is like, you know, with Follow the White Rabbit, this is just the first port, so I'm not, I haven't written code to place things, you know, on the different surfaces.
Right.
But many of the other experiences, and this is the real advantage for what augmented reality is and spatial computing, is you really want to have the things, like really the virtual object and the real objects, you know, sitting in that same world. So we would dynamically place the puzzle pieces on your, you know, on your real thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you want to be able to duck behind, duck behind the wall or duck behind a couch. Or
so I could look behind this and not have seen it until I look
exactly,
behind it.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
That couch is real. Yeah. It's my couch in my living room.
Well, then we
but
just
there's
put,
something
then we
behind
put a,
it.
We put a puzzle piece like underneath on
this
the bottom
table.
Surface on the table.
So
you have to look at the bottom of the table and then you can pull it out, right?
And that's why Microsoft calls this mixed reality.
It's mixed reality.
Real reality.
Yeah. Well, that's why Magic Leap calls it spatial computing.
Where do we stand right now with this Magic Leap? What do you feel like? Is this like Atari VCS days? How close are we to something really?
I've been in the VR space pretty much, you know, especially with White Rabbit for like the past 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, I've ported it onto every headset that's come out, right? Just to see like
that's
what's
a great
on.
Experience. Take the same game and put it on different platforms.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, we were really early, obviously, on this one. This is a very different experience. And if you think about what AR is and, you know, full-on VR headset, it's just the matter of how much of the world you see.
Yes.
You're fully occluded in VR headsets. This you're sort of blended.
I don't like that. And I'm really engaging with this. Although
it makes a lot of people more comfortable to not...
Much more comfortable.
You know, to
but
not
But it also feels
blocked.
More ghostly. It doesn't feel quite as solid as VR.
Right. One of the challenges is that it is... I think as a designer, on the design side and art side, it's really about, it's additive light. A lot of developers are finding that, like, Weta Workshop has done Dr. Grodbart's Invaders.
Right.
And what they did is they had the robots come in through portals that, you know, dynamically place on the wall and on the ceiling. And what they did is they made the portals kind of very steampunky. And because they have these really nice, you know, specular highlights on the welding and on the bolts that are in on that, you actually believe there's black there.
Yeah.
And it's really seamless, and it really sells it wonderfully. So
that's one of the problems is you can't make black.
You can't make black.
Because that's see-through.
Because it's see-through, right? Yeah. But if you look at it, and it's like,
you
but
can
I
trick
see.
People.
But yeah, it's like because your eyes, like, you know, I was talking with I think it was George about who's the project lead, that, you know, basically your eye goes to the brightest bit, and so, you know,
it doesn't see the.
It's just not looking at those seams, so it just believes that it's, you know, that it's there.
So people are going to learn this new vocabulary. This is kind of like Oculus was in the very first Oculus Rift, which I did buy in the Kickstarter and all
there
that
stuff.
There you go. But it's very early days. Yeah. But I think it's interesting. It sounds like you think this is going to happen pretty quick.
It's going to happen. I think that the quality of the apps that got released at LeapCon this week are definitely up there. They're still, you know, they're still in a somewhat demo phase.
Right. It didn't take long for VR to go from $2,500 to $1,500, and now with the new Oculus, $300.
The price point has to go down, obviously, before
mass
market.
It's got to do the same thing for that.
Yeah, and then the other thing it has to do is the content has got to be really broad. And I think that's something that Magic Leap has done really well, that the catalog is that they've got something for
it's a chicken
very
and egg.
Casual.
You've got to get this out,
get
developers and creators to play with it.
Well, but there's also conscious curation. And I think Magic Leap has done a really good job of, you have Tonandi, which is a very experiential, you know, beautiful piece. And then you've got, an action thing. You've got a creativity thing. You're hitting on all of the different types of the way that human beings play.
Yeah. Because what Magic Leap does now to creators will inform what creators end up doing.
Yeah, yeah. And I've worked on, if you think of every transition of computers, every 10 years they do. And then so like with the CD-ROM, there's always a breakout hit. Like CD-ROM, it was missed.
Right.
with low-cost color PCs. It was The Sims.
Right.
With downloadable content, it was Diner Dash. you know, mobile phones, it was Angry Birds.
Right.
Right. And AR, it's, you know, Pokemon Go.
And all of those are very different.
They're very different.
They're
and
very
they're
different.
All casual mass
market.
And
they're market, all casual mass right? market games.
Yeah, not necessarily. And then obviously there's hardcore games along the line too.
So that's what we're waiting for this.
So
the
that's
breakout,
you know,
hit.
The breakout. What is the breakout hit? You know, and oftentimes it's a casual. So that's why with Follow the White Rabbit, we're, you know, it's escape rooms. It's very
interesting.
You know, it's very.
I love the
friendly.
Escape room idea. That's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. We're having a lot of fun. A lot of really good. A lot of good reactions to it too. And we didn't even go into, I think we should just briefly, like the apps we showed are first ports, so it didn't even take into account. There are, I think, 8 hand gestures this recognizes.
We didn't even do those.
It also tracks your eyes. So when I do a motion, I like...
So there's a camera inside pointing at
there's
you.
There's cameras, there's eye tracking. And so back a couple years ago, I actually worked with iFluence and helped them design a hands-free productivity app, which is just using your eyes. So you could word process.
I could kill those pumpkins just by looking
just
at them.
Just looking at them. And then
just
take that
by
a step
looking
forward.
At
you could actually then do facial action coding. You know, Paul
right.
Ekman's facial...
I'm smiling, I'm crying, I'm...
Well, there's 7 emotions you can measure in the face, and those cameras are like kind of close. So we're really interested in, you know, taking that apart and seeing.
There's a whole lot more to be done in this.
There's a whole lot more to be
very
done.
Very interesting.
That. Yeah, but the big picture is that it does sense your space. It will create a depth map, and so you want to have not just place your
your
Lego land.
You need a big room,
and you want it to be able to move around in it.
Yeah,
right?
This was a perfect room for that.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other game that I played at LeapCon by Insomniac, it's just really cute. It's called. Seedling, and just like little Groot up here is basically you get a field kit from a galaxy that's losing.
This I want to play this. Tell us.
Yeah, so
about
basically you get this little field kit, not unlike this famous suitcase.
Yeah. Except it's virtual. Or
it's a virtual, imagine. Right? So it's just basically virtual. You open it up, and then you get this little seedling, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And a field guide.
Yeah.
And then you basically create. You basically plant it. You can plant it in the real world on your bookshelf, for example.
Yeah.
And then day by day.
You have to take care of it.
You have to take care of it. Yes.
Put on the magic leap. Oh, I got to water you.
Water it, and you have to prune it a little bit. You have to, like, you know, peel the blight off of it if it gets sick. And then what's really cool is that if you put it, like, in a bookshelf, like, where you had, like, two signs, it'll actually grow, you know, in response
into
to
the real-world objects.
Into the real-world objects. Yeah, it'll get some kind of
bonds. Don't move those books now,
yeah.
though, because you're going to really confuse it.
Right, right.
Wow.
And then you go through a series of these little seedlings. So I think that's amazing. So again, like there's a lot of, I really love how they're coming up with a wide variety of titles because it's getting through all the different types of ways that people like to play. And that's really important for a platform because you want the whole family to be this, not just the one hardcore gamer. And there's definitely going to be, you know, hardcore, you know, stuff on here as well. But you want to have those wide variety of experiences.
We get the form factor right. You wear this all day long. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't stop playing Pokemon Go.
There you go.
If I had, I would never come to work.
Nicole. Well, work would come to you.
Every time I get the chance to step into a new world in virtual reality, it seems like it goes up another level to another level, and I just have so much fun doing it. So that's why I'm really excited to be here with Ben Freeman, CEO of Infinidec, because we're going to take a look at this awesome treadmill, this like next generation treadmill behind me. It's all about enhancing the VR experience and taking it to the next level, right?
It's giving you the opportunity to walk and experience VR at a totally different world. So you can walk through it in any direction. You can move around and spin around and see what's going on
in
VR. So.
Because it's all about this immersive quality. It's very easy with VR, what we've seen in the last couple of years, to feel like it's kind of there, but not quite, because you're still kind of fixated in one position, and maybe you're controlling with your hands, but that's not how we live life. We live life by walking from one point to the other and having a virtual world be able to resemble that part of reality takes it one step further. By the way, I have tickets to see Ready Player One. You're probably going to recognize this technology if you go to see the movie. So I'm really excited to see that, which makes me even more excited to check it out. What do I need to know before I step on this?
So you're going into a totally different world. You're going to have to effectively learn how to rewalk, okay, in virtual reality.
Okay. Okay. All right. What do I need to know?
All right. So, George, you all set?
Yeah.
Okay, so face me. Okay? So the first time you're going to do it, I'm going to have you hold onto the railing.
All right.
So you just get a good balance. Okay, so the way this works is it's based on your center of gravity. So you have a tracker that's right on your lower back, which is pretty close to your center of gravity.
Yep.
We're using HTC Vive trackers for all of this.
Got it.
So right now your feet trackers are really just there to show your robotic feet so you can see your body in VR. We'll use those later when we get the headset on. So now just, you know, relax, hold on to the railing. When he starts, the system is going to center you. And then after it does that, you can start walking.
Okay.
When you start walking, I'll give you a tip. How do you normally walk? You don't walk looking down. You look straight ahead.
Sure.
So walk looking straight ahead with your hands out to the sides. It'll help keep your balance.
Okay.
If you put them out in front, you'll start to lean a little bit.
Yeah.
And
that's
not natural.
Right.
So just try to keep them out to your side a little bit and you should be good.
All right. All right.
You ready?
I think so.
Here you go.
Okay.
Okay, so you just got centered and just go ahead and walk.
I'm not even going to look down. If I walk faster, it's going to move faster in any direction?
If you walk faster, it'll move faster.
Okay. Oh, I want to slow down, turn around. Wow. And I mean, there's a little bit of adjustment for sure. Like if, I mean, obviously the floor is moving underneath me, so I'm trying to like...
It's that mental comfort with the system.
Yeah, right. But I mean, ultimately, it's keeping me where it needs to keep me. Like, one thing I wondered is if I move too fast, would I move off the treadmill in any way? I mean, that's part of where this comes in handy, right?
And with this demonstration, we do have it the speed turned down a little bit, so you can just walk at a certain pace.
If it's
at full speed, you can actually run about 8 miles an hour on this.
Wow. And how much time would it take, I'm imagining it's in milliseconds, for the system to detect my intention to run versus walk?
It's pretty instantaneous. It's again, it's based on your center of gravity. If you hang onto the rail, look down at your feet.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. That's really cool. And I did notice, I mean, even when I wasn't hanging onto the rail, if I, for a split second, decided I was going to start shifting my view downward, totally throws me off.
Yeah.
But that's not an issue when you're actually in the VR experience.
No. It's actually harder to walk without it.
Right.
Because you're thinking about it. Like walking on the diagonal, everyone thinks is really weird. It's actually harder to walk on the diagonal and you focus more on it when you're walking on the diagonal without the headset on.
Got it.
When you're in VR, you don't notice it at all.
That's cool. All right. I think
you're ready?
Slightly more comfortable now.
Yep.
And I think I can do this.
So we're going to drop this into your pocket here.
All right. That's like a battery pack.
It's a battery pack for your headset.
Okay.
Slide on your face first. And there you go. Adjust that so it's in a good position.
All right, I'm seeing a grassy plain. And I have a visual representation of both my hands and my arms in here, but I also have the controllers themselves. I will also say that there aren't many VR experiences where I've looked down and saw my feet moving.
Being able to see your body helps you feel comfortable and not lose your balance and things like that.
I just want to kick something. But I won't. Because I've got expensive technology connected to my feet.
All right. You all set?
I think so.
Okay, so same thing. You're holding off to the side.
Okay.
Onto the ring a little bit.
Yep.
It's going to center you, and then you can start walking once you feel comfortable. So I'd say hold onto the ring a little bit.
just to start off with. Now, one question that I've had about this particular aspect of things, like emulating real-world walking experience, is that in the real world, when we walk from point A to point B, it's kind of boring because it takes a long time to get from point A to point B. How, in a virtual sense, do we keep the fast-moving pace of video games that we expect?
So what we can do is the way it's mapped, your steps that you're taking in virtual reality and real reality can be mapped at different speeds. If you're a character that's 2 inches tall and you're in a big scene, your gait on your step is very different than the gait if you're Godzilla walking through Tokyo.
What's the end game here? Do you want this to be something that anyone can purchase and have in their living room because they're just that passionate about VR? Or is this more about like experience centers, going to a recreation center, throwing a bunch of people into a VR world where they can walk freely and compete against each other, that sort of thing?
Sure. Our plan right away is to launch this for VR gaming centers throughout the world and work with medical device companies. We believe there's a lot of potential for physical therapy, stroke recovery. Okay. Relearning how to walk after part of your body has been paralyzed. Corporate training, firefighter training, where firefighters can have a training center with 5 or 10 of these, and
sure.
they can set their whole gear, get on their whole gear, and walk through a house as it's burning.
Wow, I can't even, like, I hadn't even considered the kind of the therapeutic aspects of this kind of technology. You could give someone legs that maybe doesn't have them in the real sense, or give someone mobility, let's say,
yeah.
that might not have that type of mobility in the real world. And it just takes that VR experience one step further. This is really cool stuff. I love
Along
it.
With our software development, we've also got beta systems that we're going to try to ship before the end of the year. So we can get units in VR centers, medical device manufacturers, work with partners to get these out to the public.
When could people possibly start seeing these things in places that they go?
We hope sometime next year that we'll have some of these in some VR centers.
Hey, we're going to get back to more of the best of 2018 with the new screensavers. But I got to tell you about my favorite sponsor. I think one of our original sponsors when we started this network, certainly a company I've been a customer of since the old screensavers. I was driving down to San Francisco from Petaluma every day, long 2-hour commute each way. And I was about to go out of my tree. And then I discovered Audible. Audible. This was back in 2000. Audible saved my life. I've listened to over 500 books on Audible. All kinds of learning, entertainment. I listen to fiction. I listen to nonfiction. Right now, I'm listening to a really great book by one of my favorite Audible authors. I can't recommend it more highly. Yuval Noah Harari is his name. He's a professor in Israel of history. He's written some great books. In fact, I would read all three of them, starting with Homo Sapiens and Homo Deus. But his latest is 21st Ideas for the 21st Century? It's so compelling and interesting. And I think more than that, important. That's what Audible is great for. It entertains you, but it also educates and informs you, makes you a smarter person and a better citizen. And we need better citizens in this world. What would it look like if we all listened more? Audiobooks motivate us, inspire us, bring us together. And Audible's got it all. Not only the largest selections of audiobooks on the planet, but also members get 2 Audible originals every month from a changing selection. They're originals. You can't get them anywhere else. I've had so much fun listening to the Audible originals. A one-woman off-Broadway play, Carrie Mulligan's Boys and Girls. Unbelievable. Well, I can go on and on. But the best part about being an Audible member is every month you look and you say, oh, which Audible originals should I listen to? And, of course, every month, Audible members get a credit good for any audiobook, regardless of price. You also get access to so many other things. I mean, it's more than just books. I really want people to understand you get audio fitness and health workouts created exclusively for Audible. You won't get them anywhere else. If you have a month that you say, I don't need a book this month, don't fret. Unused credits roll over to the next month. And if ever you get a book you don't like, which has never happened to me, but you start listening and go, this is terrible, they'll exchange it for free, no questions asked. And all the books are yours. They're in your library. So those 500 books I've listened to over the last 18 years, wow, as an Audible subscriber, they're in my library. And I have to tell you, I go back and re-listen to some of the classics, all the Harry Potter books. I listen to all 21 Aubrey Maturin books, you know, those great seafaring novels from the Napoleonic Wars. I like that kind of stuff. I listened to them back in the 2000s as I was driving back and forth to Tech TV. And I recently started re-listening to them again. I love them so much. Shogun, when we were in Japan. I had listened to Shogun before, but I started to reread that James Clavell novel. Now, you notice I use the word read. Sometimes people yell at me and they say, you're not reading, you're listening. You hear every word. It's the full book. In fact, often it's better than the book because it comes to life in your mind. I'll give you a great example. Lincoln and the Bardo, an amazing book that is a great read, but the Audible production is 10 times better because they have different voices for all the characters, and it just comes to life. As you're driving in your car, doing the dishes, walking the dog, going to bed, having an audio book from Audible can change your life. So here's the deal. Start a 30-day trial. Get your first audiobook free, audible.com/twit. Or you want to do it on your phone because there's a great Audible app. iOS and Android. I love the. By the way, the one nice thing about Audible app, you listen in the car, you get out of the car, you pick right up where you are. You can listen to Audible on your Amazon Echo. I listen on my Sonos, and it knows where you left off. There's no bookmark necessary. It just starts where you left off. Actually, they back up like a sentence, so you can kind of say, oh, yeah, yeah, I know where I am now. This is awesome. You could text the word TWIT, T-W-I-T, to 500-500, and they'll give you a link. You can download the app, get your free Audible book. I think you're going to love it. A-U-D-I-B-L-E, audible.com/TWIT, or text TWIT to 500-500. We thank Audible for their many years of support for what we're doing here at TWIT. They're a great sponsor. I think of them as great friends and a great companion. Thank you, Audible. Now, it's time to get back to the show. One of the greatest friends of all time, one of the original screensavers. He actually, it was really kind of a great story. He was one of our IT guys, and he came to me, it's probably about in the year 99 or 2000, and said, Leo, I found what I consider to be a massive security flaw in Microsoft Windows. And we said, what? We called Microsoft. They said, that's not a bug, it's a feature. Yeah, they literally said that. So I said, Kevin Rose, come on the show. I know you've never done TV before, and show us this bug. Well, as you know, the rest is history. We dubbed him the Black Tipper, the Dark Tipper. Not the Black Tipper, the Dark Tipper. He never liked that name, by the way. And he became our expert on all things security and hacking. And, of course, went on to a great career, not only on Tech TV, but later founded Dig, which was a great success. He was on the cover of Business Week, the $60 million man. Became a venture capitalist with Google, started many more companies, and he's really doing great work these days. We caught up with Kevin Rose earlier this year. And asked him a little bit about cryptocurrencies. Here you go. Kevin Rose's tutorial on keeping your crypto safe.
So most people don't do what I did. But this was early on, and there things like Coinbase didn't exist.
Yeah.
I just downloaded software, created a wallet, and then gave people my number. You have a public number, which can also be a QR code, and people could donate.
Right.
In this case, it was donating to TWIT, or people can give you money based on that number. Nowadays, would you do it that way?
In terms of,
like, if you wanted to get into a cryptocurrency, would you create your own wallet?
I would probably start by. Well, it depends on which currency you want to purchase.
I think a lot of people say, "Well, I'm just going to go to Coinbase. And create an account there." Right,
that's the easiest way to do things for sure.
Now, there are people who used Mt. Gox in the past. They lost every bit of their Bitcoin because Mt. Gox disappeared. And that we've seen this happen before. So there's a certain amount of trust involved.
That's right.
With giving somebody
your wallet. And for me, you know, I've used Coinbase a lot in the past to purchase, but then I immediately move it off-site and into my own kind of cold storage using something like one of these hardware keys.
So you can do that. You don't have to leave the wallet.
That's right. So you can just transfer it out and get it out of there right away.
And their limitation is that they only sell what? Bitcoin, Ethereum.
Bitcoin Cash, Ethereum, and Litecoin.
That's it.
For now. They've announced they're going to do a bunch more, and they'll probably support some of the tokens as well.
I've seen there's hundreds of
these. I mean, here's cryptocurrency market cap, and I mean, there's
a great
several thousands.
Yeah.
1,610 total cryptocurrencies that they're tracking. But this is a great example of a site that you can come to, and let's just say you've heard about something, like let's say Neil, for example. Or let's use Monero. This is one of the really privacy coins that are out there. And you're like, I want to own some Monero. How do I go out and buy this? Well, you can't buy it on Coinbase, right? Like, it's not available. So what you do is you just click on the Markets tab, and you can see where it's trading. And then what I do is I typically look for some of these trading partners that have high volume. So see, these are some of the big ones here. You know, Binance is doing $7 million
a day. I wanted to buy some Stellar Lumens.
Let's
couldn't,
look at that.
But I set up a Coinbase account and then bought some Bitcoin and then sold and then went to Binance, which does sell Stellar.
Yeah, so
Lumens.
Here's Stellar right here.
And then you buy, so it's a complicated process.
So you'd have to set up a Binance account.
Yeah, I have Binance and Coinbase.
Right, so you start with Coinbase, like you said. You get
and they
it, you
take
transfer.
Dollars at Coinbase, so you give them dollars.
Right, you can use a credit card, you can use a bank account, things like that.
And then you buy Bitcoin.
That's right.
And then you transfer it to somebody else or Binance?
Yeah, so you transfer it to Binance. So if you look here, but check this out. See where it says pair?
Yeah.
So you can see that there's a Stellar Bitcoin pair. So you can go straight from Bitcoin directly into Stellar. Okay. So you wouldn't go to Coinbase and buy something like Litecoin because they're not going to be paired up.
Yeah.
You'd have to then go Litecoin, Bitcoin, and then Stellar.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of hurdles to get through. But then where do you hold this? So you'd have to set up a wallet locally, right?
Like, so what is a Bitcoin wallet? It's not like a wallet where you have money.
No, it's just
in
a piece of software that's running on your computer.
It's software.
Right. So you have your private
keys. And ultimately,
keys.
It's a file, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's a file. It's a single file, typically a .dat file, wallet.dat. And it's encrypted and stored locally on your computer.
And
so
in
you
fact,
hold
there's
the keys for that.
There's no money in the wallet.dat file. There's merely your
private key.
Private key. It's a right. private key file, just like a PGP private
right,
key file
exactly.
would be. And what you do, as when I was trying to recover my wallet, is you then load that wallet.dat file in there. It has to download the entire ledger, the right. blockchain of transactions, at least for Bitcoin, which is hundreds of gigabytes.
Unless it's a light wallet, and it just points to the network.
Some of them
then,
are a little better than
that's
this.
That's right.
Yeah. They've figured out this was a liability.
Well, it takes forever. It can take multiple
days.
Yeah. When I was setting up Monero, it was like 3 days.
And then it has to walk through the ledger
and look for your transactions
and find your transactions.
That's right.
And at the end of another day, it'll say, oh, yeah, I found 7.57 Bitcoin.
Right.
Now, what's your password?
Well, yeah, exactly. You'd have to have your password first.
So what's a better way to do this?
So there's a few things. First thing I want to recommend to everyone is that if you're serious about this stuff and you start buying it, you should get a separate email account for where you have all of your communications related
Why
to this.
Why is that?
Well, if you think about it, the ways to unlock your account and to reset it are typically by email or a text message to your phone. And so if you have a Coinbase account, those emails are going to be sent to your primary email account. And a lot of people are going to know what your primary email right. is because you're using it right. to have conversations. So what I recommend doing, get a separate Gmail account.
They're free.
Yeah, they're free. Create something obscure so no one can guess it.
Don't make it kevinrose@gmail.com.
Right, or leoscrypto@gmail.
That's even better, yeah.
And then enable their extra enhanced security.
Okay.
So that requires one of these guys here. These are different hardware keys. This one slides into a USB. This one is Bluetooth here.
These are also crypto-based. These are
right.
These are basically key validations. I have a YubiKey and a Bluetooth based ones. They require you have one Bluetooth for phones like iPhones that don't
right.
support a USB port or NFC.
Yeah, so they'll have Google will actually recommend you these three. These
yep.
are the three that I bought via yep. Google. And then you enable it on your account. Now you have to have this. If you lose it, it's gonna be a lot harder to get into your account.
Yeah.
So that will secure your email account. So
but that's good. You want it to be hard. That's
yeah.
going to be hard for
and
the
bad
And
you can do guy. This even if you're not in a cryptocurrency, right?
Yeah,
like
but
you
it,
can just,
yeah.
If
it's
you're
a pain
paranoid,
in the butt.
Yeah. Okay, second thing is...
this is two-factor plus.
That's
this
right.
This is even stronger than just two-factor.
Right, which is just like a text to your phone
yeah,
or something
For most
like
people, two-factor is sufficient. But if you're storing millions of dollars in Bitcoin, you want to make it
right.
hard to get.
So the next thing is software-based wallets. So this is an example of one that I like called Jax. And the reason I like this wallet is because it supports so many different coins.
Yeah, so my Bitcoin wallet only supports Bitcoin.
That's right. So you can go in here and say wallets,
oh, look.
And then look at all these different coins that you can enable here.
Okay.
So you can say, I have some Augur here. Some of these are actually tokens and not real currencies.
Is Jax Mac only or Mac Windows?
I believe Windows as well.
Okay.
So Ethereum, Ethereum Classic, Litecoin. You just enable them, and then you can switch between them at the top here. So you can say, how many ETH do I have? Obviously, this is just a test account, so there's not going to be any stored
And that
in here.
QR code you see there is something you can give to people?
Yeah, so this is your address.
That's
right
how they send you money.
Right, so you can just copy it right there. So I just copied it to the
Got
clipboard.
It.
You can see
and
I
you can text
can
it to them
there.
And say, send me money.
Right, exactly.
And if you have their number, you press that send button, you can send them.
You hit send, you put in their
points.
Address right there.
Yeah.
Let's say that's a dummy address. You type in how many ETH. I want to send them 4 ETH. And then hit send, and it goes right over to them.
Now, one thing I noticed is there's a transaction cost for all of these.
That's right.
And it's variable. The more you pay, the faster, at least on Bitcoin, the faster the transaction happens.
That's right. So, but here's the thing that's interesting about this, though. When you set up this wallet for the first time, there is one set of different words that they give you to restore this wallet.
Oh.
So you have to write down those words. You have to store them in something
it's a backup
like LastPass, one password,
Got
things
it.
Like that. An alternative to
I
that.
I wished I had used that wallet.
That would have. Check this out.
What's
so
this?
So this is called CryptoSteal. So you put
this is
your
hysterical.
Words. Yeah.
This is not a digital wallet.
No.
This is.
You slide
that's
those
your passphrase.
That's your passphrase. And you slide those in one at a time. and you, this is just a dummy phrase, you can't try this at home, you're not going to get anything out of it, but you slide them in, and then you keep that in a safety deposit box
you
or anything you want.
You seal it up, you
can put a lock
down
on there.
Now, if somebody got this, that would be, this is,
that's
this
right.
Is, this is something to remember with these. If somebody gets this,
right.
They've got your wallet. They've got your
This coin. Is like holding cash in your hand.
It's like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So someone took this and they put it in a, they created this big fire pit. And they put it in, and they let it sit in there for like 30 minutes, no problem. They threw it off a balcony that wow. was like 10 stories high, no problem.
So that, see, it's, again.
It's pretty see, hardcore.
If Leo had put his passphrase into this, I would be, you know, $70,000 richer right now.
You gotta remember the passphrase. It's killing me.
So that's okay, that's, so that's what's that called?
Yeah, this is called Crypto Steel.
Crypto
and it's
steel.
Not cheap. This is like $150 or somewhere around there.
You could also write it on a piece of paper and put it in a safe deposit box.
Right. So if people that have it on a piece of paper, obviously if there's a flood,
okay.
there's things like that, you know, that okay. kind of goes away. There it is. Okay. How much is the price now? I think they raised the price. $199?
Wow.
Yeah, $199.
But it's kind of a neat artifact.
It's pretty cool.
This is the kind of thing Axe would have in Billions.
Exactly.
You know, on Billions the other night, a guy did him a favor, and he handed him a USB stick. He said, here's a stick. There's $1 million on it in Bitcoin. He never gave him the passphrase, though.
That's right.
So
you need the passphrase.
You need the passphrase.
One
but
step-
you could do that, right? I could give you a USB device with a Bitcoin wallet on it.
Oh, this right here.
That's
what these are right here.
This is the stick?
Yeah, so that's a Ledger hardware wallet, and this is a Trezor hardware wallet. And if you take a look, I can show you what it looks like when they light.
Yeah,
there you go.
So
why does this
have a screen? What's the screen
for? The screen is for getting your PIN and putting your PIN in as well to unlock it. So all of your private keys are encrypted and stored on this device. And it also has a unique phrase. So if it gets damaged or smashed,
you
can buy a new one and
code.
Restore it with that unique phrase.
Okay.
And then you can take a look at all the different currencies that this supports. So
the reason you would carry this around is so that I could, like, have dinner with you and then show you my QR code? Is that on here?
Well, no. Actually, I think
What's
it does.
What's
this for? Well, it encrypts everything on this little device, so it gets it off of your computer. So many people are worried about their computer becoming compromised because they're connected
hacked.
To the internet.
Yeah.
And so this is actually, you unplug it from USB. There's no internet connectivity.
Got
Everything
it.
Is stored on there. You throw it in your own home personal vault or wherever you like, safety deposit box. And so if you look at the software right here, this is the Trezor software. It's plugged in via USB, and then here are all the different coins that it supports. So you can say, I have some Litecoin, whatever it may be, switch over here. It's talking to the USB device. Now look at the, hold up the USB
now
device.
Now I have to enter my magic PIN.
Yeah, so if you look at the USB, so that's the, it randomizes the arrangement of characters.
Oh, wow.
So I know my PIN.
So you couldn't even figure out what the, where the fingerprint juice was.
Right, so.
How do I enter it?
So you do it on the desktop. So look at the desktop now.
Oh.
So now Now I do the arrangement. I think it was this one here.
Well, so
what was
I
the
get
last
it.
One?
So on the desktop, you're just getting dots. On the key, you're getting where the keys are.
Exactly.
And you blew it.
Yeah, I did. Let me see here. Hold on.
$1 million
on.
Down the tube. What's cool about these is you call them wallets, but there's really nothing in them except these digits, these numbers.
I guess I lost the pin. I was setting it up as a dummy account, but you get the idea. Yeah, there's nothing in it but the hardware keys, and they're all encrypted on that device
as
well.
Right.
So
but you're right. So sometimes I see people put their Bitcoin wallet or their crypto wallet on their phone. That's probably a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, your phone can get stolen, and someone, if they can unlock it, they can get access to your...
That's why I used a really long, strong password known to no one, even me.
That's right. So you're safe.
I'm safe.
No one's ever stealing your coins.
My wallet. Because I keep my wallet on my NAS, and it syncs automatically to all my devices. That would be bad if I didn't have a password.
Right.
Although, as you've pointed out, there are brute force software that, since they have the wallet, they can hammer on it.
I would keep it on one of these hardware devices, get it off your computer. The one thing I will say that I like about this Ledger device, it's very similar to the Trezor. If you take a look at the screen and we scan out here, these are all the different wallets it supports, and there's a lot of different currencies here. So it'll support Ripples, it'll support what did you want to buy earlier? You wanted to buy
Stellar,
right?
Lumens.
Yeah, Stellar's on here as well.
Is it?
Let's see here. Yep, Stellar right there. It supports Stellar. So if you start buying a few of these different currencies, the more obscure ones, you have to make sure that you buy a hardware wallet that supports it.
gone, so we've turned this into a cooking show.
Yeah, exactly. we said tech.
These are, Leo and I did a tech cooking segment, but you have mostly different things. And you have some of the same things, but some that you use them very differently, which I think is interesting.
All the time. So, I mean, this is, I cook a lot, but I'm not a really highly technical cook. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, you know, I just know how to make things. And so the idea, what I was trying to think about are things that I use that just make it easier. Like, it's not, this isn't about becoming, you know, the next Gordon Ramsay. This is about your meals are easy. You don't have to think about them and they're good.
Yes.
You know, that's, that kind of makes them great. So, the one that I got introduced to in Japan, I worked on a movie in Japan for 6 weeks, and so they put me in an apartment. And in the apartment, they have every apartment has, I think every household in Japan has a zojirushi. Sorry,
yes,
looking at it, and knowing it, zojirushi. And it is this is a it's a really smart rice cooker. So if we open it up here, you'll see the rice is done. Ooh. It sang us a little song earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And what's cool about it is that you literally take this little cup and you fill it up and you decide, I want one of these cups or two of these cups or three of these cups. And then you've got these little numbers that come up the side. And that just tells you where to put the water. So you put the cup in, you fill the water to the right line, you know, and it has all the different kinds of, you know, whether it's sweet or brown or jasmine or white or in this case, sushi rice. And it just, you close it, you select what kind of rice you have on the front, and then you hit start, and it just, off it goes. You know, and it does, and then you walk away, and you don't think about it. And literally, it'll keep the rice moist and ready to eat all day. Now, it's best when it just comes out. This was done a little earlier, so we'll pull some of this, and I'll not put it in there. So, but what you're going to notice is for sushi rice, you know, it's nice and moist.
Mm-hmm.
If we take a little butter.
Oh, butter.
Butter. That's good. But if we mix that in a little bit, what we really need is some...
chopsticks.
You know, chopsticks, yeah, exactly. But you can see how it's nice and moist. It's kind of just the way you'd expect it.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if it's very Japanese to put butter in your
rice, don't think it is, but that's
I'm
okay.
But I'm doing it anyway, because I'm, you know, 1 foot in, 1 foot out, right? So anyway, but... Here, try some.
Okay. Tastes good.
And you didn't have to think about it at all.
No, that's what I like.
We didn't have to think about time. We didn't have to think about anything else. We filled the cup to the top. Good. We filled the water to the line. We shut it and hit start.
Right, and then we did something else.
And we went away and just never thought about it again. And at the end, during the show, we heard it sings a little song.
Mm-hmm.
So it sings a little song, tells you your rice is done. And if you're not ready right then, you just leave it there for a little while longer. I'd really like things that are precise about what they do, so that I don't have to be precise about what I do.
That's so smart.
You know, so the other one that I use a lot is I use the Innova. And I have lots of different sous vide cookers. I got the first one that was like a box. It was like the Supreme, and it was like a box you put stuff in. And then I've got a couple different other versions of it. But I've been the happiest with the Innova, and I admit that I have a couple. the reason is that what the Innova is good at, and you probably talked about it on your other segment, is or what a sous vide cooker is good at, is that it's very precise about the temperature. You don't have to be very precise about the time. So that what that means is that we have friends coming over, and I want to have a steak right when they get over there, or I want to be ready for that. I don't have to worry about when I start that steak.
Mm-hmm.
When they come over, we'll sit, we'll say hi, we'll grab a beer, and I'll throw this and cook it in minutes, 2 or 3 minutes, and it's going to be great because the whole thing has been cooked. Essentially, how the sous vide works is that the water is at a certain temperature, your steak is at a different temperature. As you leave the steak in, or the steak, the chicken, the vegetables, the salmon, as you leave it in there longer, it essentially, the meat equalizes temperature with the water. So end to end, it's whatever temperature you set. So in this case, I set it to 128 degrees Fahrenheit. That means the whole steak after an hour is at 128 degrees. Now, the only thing that happens when I leave it longer is that it gets softer, because mm-hmm. basically the heat is denaturing the protein. And if you... what happens is, like, we left it in here for an hour, so we'll try it after an hour. For like a tri-tip, my wife likes it at about 36 hours. I like it at about 24 hours. If you leave it at 48 hours, I think it gets a little mealy because it gets soft.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found if you leave it for 3 weeks, Turns into liquid.
Why would you leave it for 3 weeks?
I would love to say that it was an experiment. I just wanted to see what would happen. But I put it in, and I had the Supreme, which is closed, doesn't make any noise.
Uh-huh.
I put it in, and I was in a rush the next day. I went to Europe. And I came back, and it was still on.
You didn't remember that you didn't eat your steak?
There was a lot of things going on. I was going to eat it that evening, and then I realized, oh, I got to leave that evening.
Yeah.
And then I just didn't think about it again. And then there's a lot of things going on in my head, mm-hmm. and so things get left behind.
So none of this technology is going to remind you to eat?
No.
Okay.
No, it's just going to be, but when you remember, it's there waiting for you. You know,
yeah.
and so the great thing is that, again, like if you're doing a barbecue, what's great is you might put 2 or 3 steaks in there. And so whenever you feel like having another one, you just pull it out. There's a couple different ways of heating it. I brought a blowtorch. We'll play with that in a second. Mm. You can also throw it on a hot pan. So you can get a cast iron pan and get it up to 500 degrees and throw it on there and sear it. Because when it comes out, you'll see that it looks a little like a science experiment.
Mm-hmm.
But you just got to caramelize that outside area. The best way to do it is a big green egg or some version of that where you're basically get it up to 800, 900 degrees, throw it in for a minute on each side. And you're done. And it'll be the best steak you've ever had, and you didn't have to do anything. So let me show you how you do it. This is the part that gets people caught up, is they buy this part, right? They've seen the Innova stuff. They buy it. And then if they're smart, the first thing that everybody does is they buy this, and then they start using it with their pots. then there's like a pot. Because they advertise, like, this is all you need, right? It's not all you need. So the way to do this is you get this, and this is now down to $70 or $80 or something. It's not very expensive. When I bought it, it was more expensive, not that I'm bitter. And then I got this. This is a Rubbermaid 12 quart. And if you buy this on Amazon, it'll say, hey, would you like one of these? And the answer is yes. Yes, you would. And then...
What, does it come with this?
No, this is a Sovita. And it, when you buy this, it will say, hey, do you want this? And the answer, you won't say yes the first time, and you wish you had. So what this does is it keeps the temperature. It'll put... use less energy with this if you have this to insulate it a little bit. And then there's a top that I forgot to bring in, which is that you put it over and it keeps the water from evaporating. So those are the kind of fool things. And then some people, if they're going to do something for a long period of time, actually have cut holes in igloos and stuck this in, you know, into the thing, because then it really keeps the water where you want it to be. And that has nothing to do with the quality of the sous vide. It just has to do with how much energy you're using to keep it at that temperature. So you get this little kit. And this is all going to, together, all of these are going to be about $100, $9,500. Then I have bought very big and expensive vacuum sealers, mm-hmm. And this one's just fine.
How much is that one?
This one's like $70 or $50. It's like $50 to $70, depending on where you see it. It's made by some Chinese company, and the name up here changes about every 6 months.
But
if you look at this form factor, this is what it should be. So this is a vacuum sealer. I'm just going to open it up. And there's a couple things that catch people. The first thing is this is a roll of vacuum seal. So basically it's just one long roll. And this is the way to do this, because instead of trying to figure out which Ziploc to use or what bag, you just make it as long. If you have a tri-tip, you need this much. If you have a little steak, you need this much. So you just decide what you need. And so you just cut the length. And I've got a little steak in here that I grabbed at Rayleigh's on the way here. And so you take your steak and... Well, what you would normally do is put it on a plate, but I'm just going to stick it in here now. And then I use a lot of different kind of salts. This is salt. We talked about this. This is the same salt we use, this little Maldon sea salt.
Yeah,
these are
at home.
Flakes, and the flakes tend to work really well with the steak when you're doing it. And I'm making a big mess with the salt. Sorry in advance.
It's okay.
Anyway, so then you get some salt on here, and you want to get it on both sides. And this, I usually do it on a plate, but I just realized I don't really have it quite set up right, so I'm just going to do it this way. I'm going to get salt all over this table and in the electronics, and John is going to hate that.
Okay, what's this?
This is Espresso Brava salt. We're not going to use it on this one, but it is so good. So you can add this to the steak, and it actually gives it a whole different kind of taste.
Can you use this on other stuff? Because I don't actually eat steak. So you can
use it on all kinds of things that you would use salt on.
Eat it straight?
Yeah, okay. You can.
I'll do that.
It might give you a little buzz too.
Okay.
Like, yeah. So anyway, then I like to add a little, you know, like a little twig of rosemary,
mm-hmm.
to set it up. So you stick it in there.
Oh, you don't even break it up. You just stick it in there.
Stick it in there with there. Now, this is what everyone screws up when they buy it the first time. They put it way up here.
Oh.
And then they're like, it doesn't work. Every single person I've ever given one of these to, it's a lot of people, they always say it doesn't work. And so you have to get it right in, because this is the gap that's pulling the oxygen out. Uh-huh. So then you push this in, and then you hit.
Whoa.
Just thinking about it. And then, so what it does, it sucks all the oxygen out and then immediately seals the end. And so now you have, it's ready to go. And the reason you need to do this is because you need the water to be completely touching the surface of this object. If there's air in there, number one is you could, it's a great breeding ground for bad things if you're going to leave it there for a long time.
Like 3 weeks.
Yeah, like 3 weeks or 2 days. but it also means that the water is completely touching all of this and you don't have big air gaps. And the biggest thing is that it floats. So if you throw it in there and you have air oxygen in it, it'll float to the top, and then there's this constant issue. So anyways, you take that. We had one that we put in before the show.
Okay. You want the plate?
Yeah, sure. We'll grab one of these plates here. So this is the. Sorry, I'm making a really big mess here.
That's okay. We don't have to clean it up.
Excellent. So then you take this guy and you just throw him in there, right? And then we find our scissors.
I have to say, that doesn't look that good.
It doesn't, not until you're... Oh, you don't eat steak either, so
right.
It's not... You're
but
be
I mean,
like,
even when I used to, no, like, it looks a little...
No, because it doesn't have... It hasn't been seared. So you're used to seeing it seared by the time it does this. Like, usually fire has affected it, right? And to someone who doesn't have steak, does it really gross you out to have steak near you?
No. I mean, even if you loved steak, like, this looks weird, right? It looks like a little moldy...
I know. As I said earlier, it'll look like a science experiment. So then what you... Celery and carrots is just the base of a soup. All right. So anyway. So now we... This is the easiest way to do it when we don't have anything else to be really hot.
Should we have safety goggles? I guess not.
Sure. I think safety goggles would be a great idea. If only we had some safety goggles, we'd be safe now. But instead... We're living on the edge. So now, my kids, the nice thing about doing it this way is that it is a lot more fun at parties.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, my kids, if I did this once, I think, for one of my kids, like, where their friends came over, and they only wanted the sous vide because they wanted to, they wanted me to do this in front of their friends.
Right, they wanted you to wield fire.
And they wanted to do it in front of their friends, and I was like, let's talk about that.
It smells really good. Can you make bacon with this?
Oh yeah, you can make bacon. So I make a bacon sandwich, an egg, bacon, and cheese sandwich for my kids for breakfast. And I cook Black Forest for about a day in the sous vide, and then you cook it for like a minute on each side, and it is just super soft, because remember, everything just gets softer. So anyway, so there you go. So now it looks more like a steak, right?
This is a concept that we have seen for over a decade. It is something that has so much promise, and yet sometimes it has been a little bumpy as far as adoption and implementation is concerned. Thank you very much for coming to see us. Now, of course, you've got your gear set up here, and we are speaking...
This is Asher.
That's
he
right.
He co-founded Blade. Blade is doing online gaming, and I mean, you're giving the equivalent of a GTX 1080,
ooh,
a Xeon or an i7 equivalent
so-called
processor.
So-called dedicated core that you're getting, and you're getting basically equivalent to $2,000 PC that will always stay.
Was that $2,000 with current 1080p value, MSRP of 1080p, or the value 4 weeks ago?
It's the value usually before the high rise when you can find the, where you cannot find even for $1,000 a GTX 1080. Yeah.
So how much am I paying a month?
So you're paying $35 per month.
Okay.
And you're getting a computer that you can access it from everywhere, okay, from any device, any screen.
Actually, let's make that clear, because some people might think, oh, it's just games on tap. This is a full Windows 10 desktop.
Exactly. I don't know if they can see the screen here, but basically here we have the Shadow Box. So the Shadow Box is optional, and it can replace your desktop PC. So the goal of a Shadow is that you will feel that the Windows is running here on this small box.
Right.
Even if this small box is taking only 15 watts of power, and basically it's doing nothing than just to decode the video stream that's arriving from the cloud. So As you can see, we're getting a full Windows here. We have dedicated components that we're getting from the cloud. Mm-hmm. And unlike other solutions in the past, we are doing end-to-end solution, which means that we are building our own servers. We're putting them in our own rooms in the data centers. So we can give a dedicated component to each user. So you are not sharing your graphic card with other users. You are not sharing your CPU cores with users. You're getting your own components, so you will always have the same level of high performance.
Okay, and you got to switch this because, I mean, I'm watching his movement, and it actually is, I don't see
you
much lag.
You can play yourself if you want to.
In fact, the lag that I see, I could probably attribute to the fact that it's going through a switcher, the TriCaster, a scaler, and then back here.
Capturing the screen also, yeah.
Watch me run off a cliff really quickly. Yeah.
Now, when I install this on a 5-year-old laptop, I have an Acer S7 that it's an ultrabook. It had no power when it was new, and now it's very long in the tooth. I was able to run modern games. I was able to run Call of Duty, and it
shouldn't.
You
can play the last Far Cry 5 on a 5-year laptop on the max setting of Far Cry, and you can run it on a 4K resolution or 144 FPS, and we are the only one in the market because we did an end-to-end solution. It's also, we developed all the software that's doing the capturing, encoding, and streaming, and we succeed to achieve to less than 3 milliseconds for the most complicated frame of 4K.
So this is not a shared server. This is not a virtual machine. This is an actual, as actually Father Robert ran into saying, you were actually configuring Windows 10 when you set up your account, and you're actually getting your own dedicated GPU?
Exactly. You're getting your own fully dedicated for your GPU. You're getting your own CPU cores and your own memory, and you're getting 256 gigabytes of storage, and you're getting a full Windows 10. So you can install Steam, you can install Origin, you can install any platform and download all your games and play them directly on a full setting.
Do you have to put colo centers all over the... I mean, is the United States, the world? Where are you guys currently selling?
So right now we launched in West Europe last year, mm-hmm. and now we're doing soft launch here in California to really familiar and getting all the information about the internet infrastructure here, mm-hmm. How to deal with it, how to learn also the market. The gamers here are actually very different from the gamers in Europe.
Okay.
So we're learning, we're interacting with our community, and until this summer we're going to cover all U.S. Nationwide.
Okay.
Okay, I have to ask this because I get the value proposition. The value proposition is I pay $420 a year, and I get a PC that is automatically updated. So it's
always
updated on your side. I don't
or 50
have to
bucks
about
a month.
It. Or 50 bucks a month.
$35 basically.
Yeah.
Right.
If you want to go month to month.
Yeah.
But then, and Patrick brought this up in the pre-show, I have to be concerned about what I've seen happen to other streaming services where they were all killed by lag. Yeah. Every single one of them was killed by lag because you can't do a high-performance, Twitch-capable gaming system over just the regular latency that you're going to get on the internet. So how do you fix that? I mean, obviously, I can't do that with RDP, so this isn't RDP.
Yeah.
But what do you have? What's your secret sauce?
So basically, like I said, because we develop end-to-end solution, we are also doing our own protocols for the streaming that's capable to reach much, much better results than any standard streaming so far. And actually, so far, the biggest blocker was not on the network itself, but was on the capturing and encoding and all this process that's taking more time than the network. The network, you can simply overcome it by placing data centers next to the end client,
okay.
not far away, to have a good peering agreement with all the internet providers like Comcast, AT&T, all of those, and to have peering on the other side. Now,
so it seems like we are not... You have already thought about all of the trauma that we have run through in all the previous gaming services.
But look, for example, what's a small advantage that we give to you. I don't know what's your internet speed here. I guess it's around 200 megabit or something like that.
We've got a decent connection.
If you're going here, but actually here we are from our data center. So you use your computer, even if you have 15 megabit at your home, mm-hmm. you're still getting download speed of 1 gigabit per second.
Okay.
You're getting super low ping time. So actually, when you're playing online game and competitive games, you're getting lower ping than your local PC because we have a direct data center.
You're basically sitting in the colo and not dealing with all of the cruft at the ISP. So I can, and we talked about this before. This isn't just gaming. If I want to run Adobe Premiere on this, I can do that. If I want to run, okay,
it's your Windows 10. You can install whatever you want on it. But much more than that, you can start to play in your room, in your shadow box, and then you need to go to the kitchen. I can take my tablet, I can launch either iOS, either Android. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can see the tablet here. I'm launching the Shadow app. And I can continue, I can directly continue to play on the tablet.
This is getting pretty meta at this point.
I don't know if you ever saw this kind of level of graphic on a $200 tablet.
Okay, that's not bad. That's
actually, and we can play directly without any latency, any kind of game for PC, directly on the tablet. And much more than that, you can take your smartphone. So this is my personal iPhone. I don't know if you can see the screen of it. But we are on LTE connection. We are not on the Wi-Fi. We are directly on the LTE connection, and I can launch the Shadow application. And here we have the Shadow Beyond, which, you know, it's not easy to use the Windows UI directly on a phone screen. So it showed me all the games that I have installed on my computer, and I can launch them directly. So we can launch the Tomb Raider. And I can play directly on my iPhone without any latency, any lag on a 4G connection.
Okay, that looks really, really good. I'm just going to say that.
And
wow.
You can do it any kind of in any kind of place, in the underground, in the street. You can continue to play whatever you want directly. And, of course, on a Mac computer, which is very nice design computer. I love the design of this computer. The weight, the screen is amazing.
But there's no Windows key.
But exactly. You don't have... you can do the command keys switching to be the Windows key. But you can finally play any kind of Windows game directly on the Mac screen, mm-hmm. on the nice Retina display. It's affecting immediately, and you can have full Windows. So you can put your Photoshop,
I love the fact that I had a full Windows environment.
Exactly.
Because I can install anything on top of that, and it gives me a super capable machine.
Hey, what's up? We are in Pleasanton, and I'm wearing something pretty fancy. I think you would agree. You're probably wondering why I'm wearing this kind of a suit. And actually, it's because we're at a place called iFly, which means that I get to live a lifelong dream of actually seeing what it's like to skydive. But this is TWIT, right? So there has to be a technology angle. Skydiving is great. Well, they do skydiving in combination with virtual reality to simulate the entire experience. I am so pumped and slightly terrified, but we're going to literally jump into it right now.
The skydiving takes place inside a vertical wind tunnel that is blanketed with fans that push the air up. Wind is pushed through that tunnel at speeds that I saw starting around 120 miles per hour. My instructor showcased his own capabilities at speeds upwards of 180 miles per hour, which is pretty crazy. But none of this happened before I was given a solid education on what to expect.
What in the...
Hi, I'm Chris. I'll be your guide today.
This included learning a few hand signals that would help to guide me, the flyer, and keep my body in the air safely while wearing earplugs that are actually blocking the ear-piercing noise of the fans inside the tunnel. From there, I had to make sure that my suit fit me properly. Mental note, I'm insanely tall, so usually the answer is not really. And I had to get fitted with helmets and eye gear to protect me in flight. This was perhaps a bit more disconcerting when throwing the VR helmet onto my head. I will admit, when I put the VR helmet on, I felt a moment of panic. The thought of being propelled into the air while wearing a Gear VR helmet was kind of getting to me a little bit. But then I realized it was because the helmet was a bit too small for my head. So, you know, it just didn't fit.
Oh, that's what I missed. I just had to go like this.
Once I replaced it with a larger VR helmet, I knew I'd be okay, and it was time to soldier on. From there, I headed into the wind tunnel waiting area. This is where you sit or pace nervously as you await your turn inside the wind tunnel. And after a quick recap of the hand signals and a once-over on my gear, I was ready to fall into the wind tunnel. Prepare for the VR flight, I had to first fly a few times with all senses in check to make sure I had the basics down before being blinded to the world with a VR goggle on my face. I'd literally fall into the door, arms above my head, with my instructor guiding my body into the air. It was a total leap of faith. But suddenly, I found myself midair, wind whisking every fold in my jumpsuit, my arms held out in front of me and in place firmly by the strong wind. The challenge was really all about being loose, but not too loose. If I tensed up, my body might not hover symmetrically, And the same could be said for when I let my limbs fall loose. The trick was finding that perfect balance, and obviously the hand signals really helped in finding that balance. My second flight was perhaps my best flight. I felt like I was totally on. This was where I felt truly in control of my body position in midair, and where I noticed my instructor has to do the least to keep me centered inside the wind tunnel. I did begin to tense up toward the end of that second flight and almost immediately noticed a shifting of my stability, which I quickly corrected.
Holy cow!
So then, after all of this, I was ready to throw on the modified helmet with a Samsung Gear VR embedded into it. Now, thankfully, with the helmet on, I was shown the pass-through camera while standing in the waiting area, so I wasn't completely shut off from the world. My instructor let me know that the experience was about to begin, and I was led over to the entrance of the tube. That's when the 360-degree immersive video began playback, and suddenly, there I was in the belly of a plane, surrounded by fellow divers getting ready to jump out. And on the count of three, I would lean forward through the door, hands in the air, and just trust that I'd make it into the air alive. Now, sure enough, the staff are absolute pros, and I suddenly found myself flying out of a plane, plummeting toward Dubai, United Arab Emirates. As I looked around me, I saw other skydivers making the trip with me and thought it was interesting at first. I quickly realized why the effect wasn't absolutely convincing, though. Sure, my brain felt being in midair and my eyes saw me above a city, but I wasn't convinced in the way I expected to be. In VR, it's very hard to really lock onto the spatial cues that clue you into this kind of travel. The ground is so far away that very quickly it really just seems like you're looking at a picture of a city from above versus actually plunging rapidly toward it. Not only that, the resolution that was achieved with the Gear VR and the resolution of the video that was being played were low enough that it really just kind of felt like, well, I'm wearing VR while skydiving more than anything else. Jumping out of the plane was perhaps the most exhilarating part because of the interactive element of pushing oneself into the unknown, timed with the visuals in VR. Hovering over the cityscape was maybe a mere taste of what it could become in due time, either with improved resolution, a more dimensional experience, or some other enhancement that we just haven't quite figured out yet.
All right, I had an amazing time. It's an exhilarating experience, including with VR. There's some potential there to kind of improve that experience and make it just a little bit more convincing. But I really liked what I saw, and I'm actually thinking I might bring my kids out and show them what it's all about. I think they'd be pretty excited to do it. I'm Jason Howell. I'll see you next time.
We have assembled the smartest, finest minds at TWIT. Well, anyway, whoever was available on Monday to escape from the nuclear reactor where Reason, the escape room in San Francisco. It's a team-building exercise. You ready to build a team, Megan Maroney?
I am.
Jason?
Yeah, sure.
You're ready? Colleen? Jerry? Yeah. I don't think you're taking this seriously. You brought a little GoPro with you. Let's meet the Reason crew, all right? You built a nuclear reactor here, and you're having trouble with a meltdown?
Yes, we do, and we really need your help, sir.
What's your name?
My name is Karina.
Hi, Karina.
Hi.
And you and Mike founded Reason?
Yes, yes, we did.
2 years ago?
Yep.
What is the point of this?
Well, it's a mix. So one of the things that we really want to focus on is education. Because nowadays, you know, there are a lot of technologies on the market, and even here in Silicon Valley, people know about virtual reality, 3D printing, drones, but you don't really have the opportunity to experiment with them. You know, you have to buy them, and they're still pretty expensive. So we wanted to build a venue where people can easily get access to them and see if they like it, see what the whole fuss is about, and also put it in a more engaging kind of experience.
I think the meltdown is happening now. Pull the rods! Okay. So this we're going to be using a lot of modern technology,
yes,
in the process.
Exactly.
But it's also about working together as a team.
Definitely. So it's definitely a team activity. And it's all about coordinating and problem solving. So it's less about the puzzle aspect, so you have to solve a puzzle really hard for 30 minutes, and more about working together and see how you can bring different skills to achieve the mission that you have.
Okay, so we don't have to be smart.
It helps, but if you work really well as a team, that's going to be even better.
Work as a team. Now, you guys have never done this before, but here's our opportunity. What is the fastest? And we're going to do the nuclear reactor room, right? There's two of them. What's the other one?
The other one is crash site.
It's an alien land crash site.
Exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy.
Yeah.
That's for bigger groups.
Yes,
okay.
Definitely.
And how big can a nuclear reactor be?
So a nuclear reactor goes up to 15 players.
Well, that's pretty big.
Yeah.
Two rooms.
Yeah.
So how big is the alien landing?
That one is even bigger. That can go to 20 plus. We can even have 25 people in there at the same time.
A company might bring a group in, you know, a team that works together, bring them in to help them kind of have some fun, but also to facilitate them working together in the future.
Yeah.
Cool.
Exactly.
What's the fastest anybody has ever saved the nuclear reactor?
The fastest is 48 minutes.
48 minutes.
Today's mission is a pretty standard sci-fi scenario. Basically, we have a nuclear reactor that was sabotaged, and the meltdown sequence was initiated. So your mission today is to stop the meltdown from happening. Otherwise, and listen carefully here, you're not going to make it to dinner. Very high stakes.
But we've ordered sandwiches. Oh, no.
Yeah, so you really have to get out if you want to make it to that.
Yeah.
Cool. So a few things to help you in your mission. As you guys know, this is a team activity. So working together is the most important thing in there. So make sure you communicate as much as possible. You divide and conquer because you'll be able to work on multiple puzzles at the same time. You have unlimited hints, so feel free to ask for help.
The team that got out in 48 minutes, did they ask for any
help?
They
did not have any hints. Yeah.
Okay, well, there's a standard we're setting here.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, you ready, guys? We're going to do it. All right, everybody. All right, okay. I have very little confidence at this point. We're in here now. Let's just hit this button and see what happens. Nothing is happening.
These all smell. They have different smells. If you press the button, the smell comes out.
Seriously?
Apparently, I have to put this on. Ah, this is, I can't see a thing. Press the colored button.
Sure.
Nothing. All right, we've used 11 minutes, kids. We got to make some progress. What the hell happened there?
What was that?
Is there anything that requires, like, a code to be entered?
Okay.
No one's listening.
Is this a kaleidoscope? What is this? I mean, why would it be here? Why are we here?
How's it going today?
Terrible!
I think we're going to still try and do it ourselves.
What does SSMT mean to anybody? We're in deep trouble here.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh!
Simple match is up to here. So this one goes first.
Oh!
Yay!
Oh, we got a long way to go, kids.
Nothing's working.
Nothing's working! Come on, guys, there's an incoming video transmission. Oh, it's an HTC Vive.
Oh,
do you have the password?
How do you even get to that command?
We gotta 3D print something? No.
I'm putting password.
That was all you. I just used my fingers to enter something.
Who's good at drones in here? Whoa, watch out, Jerry. We have 10 minutes and 50 seconds, boys and girls.
Yeah.
This is good. We're making progress. We might get out of here alive.
We might.
Oh, yes!
Yes!
Nice. The next one is the other one.
Yep. Give me the number. Done. Override terminal. Here we go.
10 seconds. Yellow. Blue.
Okay.
White.
To restart the
capture.
No, it is. It's going to blow. Game over. Game over, man.
3, 2, 1.
Oh! We were so close. What did we get wrong, Karina?
It worked! Oh my god!
That was awesome!
Wow, I can't believe it. That's it. It's over. The end of the line. It's been a great... How many years have we done this show? Let's see. I could do some math. This is episode... What episode is this? 189. We do 51 shows a year. That's almost exactly 3 years we've been doing this show. I hope you've enjoyed these shows, and I hope people appreciated the tribute we paid to the original screensavers in the 6 years I did that on Tech TV. We tried to recreate kind of the spirit and the feeling of it, and I think we did a pretty good job. Thanks to the staff who put in so much hard work, our executive producer and my wife and our CEO, Lisa Laporte, and Jerry and Anthony. I hope you've enjoyed this new screensavers. I'm sorry that we've had to call it a day, but as it happens to every show, there comes a time when it's time to say goodbye. Thanks for being here. And we'll see you next year with some brand new stuff. See you then.